and welcome to episode 260 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the Instagram comic Black, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And I didn't write anything for the intro this week, so you just have to take my word for it. It really is Tony Esmond.
Oh, I like that. It really is Tony Esmond. That's good.
That's a good one.
Should we have that on a t-shirt?
I was thinking about putting the byline from Tony Osmond. Tony Esmond is no fucking relation to Tony Osmond. Pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, we'll probably be talking about that in a bit.
Wednesday, baby.
Oh, Wednesday. Well, that's not the name of the book.
That's the physical release.
Yeah. Oh, the physical release. There's so many jokes already.
He's released a few, isn't he?
But before we get to that, we have a guest this week. Yes. We are very pleased to be joined by the artists of titles such as Griff Grissel, Resurrection Men, and the upcoming Hordes of Surrey, Rory Donald. Hello, sir.
Hey. Welcome to the bottom of the barrel.
Oh, shut up.
This has been long
He's
overdue.
Not a guest. He's a fourth chair.
Yeah. Now, you might have heard Rory a couple of times in interviews and some conventions, because we always bump into him all over the place. But, we've been friends with Rory for years now. And we've been watching his ongoing adventures in the indie comic scene very closely, churning out amazing artwork, sir. And also, pretty much every convention that he goes to, he's our walking billboard. Because
It's become my lucky con t-shirt.
What do you mean, a lucky con t-shirt?
All right, don't tell your missus.
I always put on the first day when I come into the con, so the first walk around, I put that on.
Nice.
He's one of the lucky few that has an Awesome Comics Podcast t-shirt.
We must get some more of them one day.
Yeah, I think we'll have to do
a different design.
Do
a small one of that design, let us know, because the good lady wife was after one, and I believe the last one, Mr. Wild Goose.
Wild Goose got the last one,
Because I think with t-shirts, through that experience of printing them, I think when it concerns this show, it'll be one of those we should put out. Here's a new t-shirt that we're going to put out. Put your order in, or let us know what size you want, and then we'll do the printing. Because otherwise, and I'm
you
sure
get
there's
left
lot,
with loads of weird sizes.
Yeah, there's lots.
I've got a feeling it will say 300 on it. That's what I've got a feeling. By the time we get around to it, you know, we're like, it will say 300, and we ain't that far off.
Yeah, but you can't exactly say I was there for episode 300, because what else are you going to say? Like, unless.
300 times.
Unless it's just a picture of like Gerard Butler's face.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Gerard Depardieu's face.
Yeah. Oh, Gerard Depardieu. 300 would have been a very different film if it was Gerard Depardieu, wouldn't it?
I'd watch that.
God.
A better film.
It'd be a little less leather on show, I imagine.
Yeah, it'd be off his nut, wouldn't he? Off his nut and Charlie. Yeah. Other drugs are available.
Yeah. But enough about drugs.
To kick us off. Shall I give us a reading from the Cambridge Companion?
Oh, yeah, right. A little religious reading.
Yeah. Okay, Dan, go.
So we got this came out a couple of years ago, and it was going around on Twitter, and I thought, let's take it and read the excerpt from the start. So it's the Cambridge Companion to the graphic novel. The introduction, the graphic novel, an extended comic book freed the commercial constrictions, written by adults for adults, and able to tackle complex and sophisticated issues using all of the tools available to the best artists and writers, is the newest literary artistic genre and one of the most exciting areas of humanistic study today.
I mean,
what did you say to that?
We just witnessed Dan try not to laugh through the whole of that reading.
I sat in the cinema once, and there was a real Ponzi advert on, and it all went quiet after the advert, and all I could hear was an Australian sitting behind me who just went, "What a load of wank." And that's how I feel about that.
An extended comic book freed of the commercial constructions.
Oh, fuck God. Off.
Fuck off.
It's the fucking longest run on sentence I've ever read as well. Awful.
Yeah. Let's get the writer on.
Yeah. Oh, God. What?
There's comic books and graphic novels, and they're to me, they're pretty much interchangeable. If you've got a problem with reading a graphic novel because it's seen as a comic book, that's more on you than the medium.
Yeah. And let's face it, Watchmen was kind of a series of comics first, and everyone goes to see, but a graphic novel. Yeah, but it was comics. I was buying it as comics.
Yeah. It was 12 issues that they just happened to collect.
Don't be turning your nose up at fucking comics when you're clutching a graphic novel.
Well, I think zines has gone the same way. I think people wonder about and go, oh, zines, how interesting.
Yeah, I'm not into comics, but I like zines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We see that quite a lot now, don't we? Everyone, and that's just a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, everyone on this show, we like them all. We don't care.
So, that's your next T-shirt, that is. It's all comics.
Yeah,
yes.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, get your orders in.
Yeah.
But speaking of comics, we're going to serve up some comic making chatter, indie book recommendations, and more soon enough. But speaking of delicious things, do you know what else will make your mouth water?
Comic House.
Yes, our lovely sponsor, Comic House.
I'm so going to shout that then.
Well, you've got to do the sign off as well, Rory.
I'm all over that.
To win it, Rory.
And
we can fuck this up anymore.
Yeah. You lovely people should be all over Comic House. Yes, they are our sponsor. They are our sponsor, and they put up with these ads, but in all seriousness, they are a great indie comic marketplace that we love, and they're doing it for the love of comics. That's why we do this show anyway. And if you're making comics, you're not in it for the money.
Rewind. Someone getting paid for this.
Hang on. Right. I mean, just by saying that line, I think I just made this show a comedy show, didn't I? anything to get the word out about this show. Anyway, but if you go to comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database with loads of indie and small press publishers. Put their work on there. If you self-publish, you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. You've probably got boxes of hard copies, like all of us, in your house somewhere. We're going to get crushed by them one day, unless we start selling them. To people who can't go to conventions.
You want to buy them.
Yeah. What we always talk about as well is the app, the Comic House app, which is fantastic. We've got subscriptions. Most of our audience have got subscriptions, I would imagine. And if you're new to the show, you really should get a subscription because it is flipping awesome. There's a feature section on the site, and it's basically like Netflix for comics, only £3 a month, or what's that in dollars? I don't know, but it's basically the price of like one comic, actually probably one digital comic now. If you go to like Comixology or anything, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. What stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Teddy Boy, issue 1. I think we mentioned this last week, 1-4. The Undesirables, Ashcan Edition, Breaks, Petrichor, Surrealsville, Isolated, version 6, and Picture Books for Bad People, the collected works of John Tucker. I read through Teddy Boy 1 this week, Tony. It's lively, but I really think they should drop a few quid into getting a proper translation.
It's like they've used Google Translate, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, it's just like straight words, and it doesn't feel right. It's not natural. All the speech is.
Yeah, they're just translating words without forming them into sentences in parts of it, I think. Yeah, I know what you mean. But it is beautiful, man. The colour, everything in it is lovely.
God,
it's like the old Jade Man comics we used to get. Do you remember?
I used it to be black and white. So when I was going through it, it's like full colour with like these great action sequences. I was like, oh, this is great. It's brutal.
And I don't know much. I don't know much about the difference between Chinese and Japanese comics, but I think that's more of a Chinese comic, isn't it?
Yes.
The way that they do theirs, and I really
it's
love
come
it.
Out of Hong Kong, I think they were saying Hong Kong, but it's about like a proper gangster that they sort of fictionalized his life. Is that right?
I think you're right. Think that rings a bell.
But like you're saying, like they're having a meal at a table, and these guys come up, and he goes, "Oh, look, here's the people with the bad expressions on their face or something," and I was like, "What?"
It reminded me a bit of, if anyone's read the manga Sanctuary. About the two brothers, it's like it's one's a cop and one's a villain. It looks similar to art to that, but with more sort of motion lines and more color, I think, and quite a lot of shagging.
It's not too explicit, the sex scenes.
No, there's no close-ups there.
You see what they're doing, but it's like it's nothing you wouldn't see
on
classy
a stuff
show.
Then basically it's classy
stuff.
Quite go that far, but kind of.
Comics is always classy, Tony. Comics is always classy, and all the good
us,
all the good ones, as well as ours, can be found on Comic House.
No one's ever described my comics as classy. I'm putting that as a pull quote on the back of Atomic Hercules trade.
That'd be amazing.
Rory, do you have some of your titles on Comic House?
I think so, yeah. I think the first two Griff Gristles are on there. I believe the first Resurrection Men's on there. And
what's the thing you did with John Late? Is that on there, dude?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because that was in... Yeah, it was, yeah. Yeah, Slice Quarterly, yeah, that was in that.
Yeah, we're both in that, then.
And, one with True Believers... what was that, Tales from Beyond or whatever it was called?
Oh,
Tales from Beyond.
Did a little four-page Griff one in there as well, so yeah.
That's right.
One of the good things about commishouse.com, the website, you can look up creators and list off their works. So he's got 100% biodegradable, issue 20, Cadavers, Comic House 12, Christmas and 1. Paperbacks and Instains, Samurai Slasher Volume 3.
Oh, bloody hell.
Were you in that?
I'm just feeling bad now. I've forgotten to mention all of them.
I mean, there's all these. We're going to talk about Rory's work in a minute, so it's a good. It's real nice that we've reminded him of what he's actually done.
I've actually got a list written next to me here to make sure I didn't forget at all.
we love a bit of revision. Yeah. We love a bit of revision.
Yeah. But also on Comic House, though, they are looking to get more all ages and kids books on there because they're going to set up a kids section. Because obviously, a lot of comics, like we say, can be pretty grown up. Or immature if it's, like I said, our books. But if you're a parent and you want like a child friendly sort of section of it, so you can have all of your grown up books sort of locked away so that the kids can't read them, but they've got a library of comics themselves, they're setting that up as well. So if there's any sort of all ages creators, or if you've got comics out there that are perfect for kids, get in touch with Comic House because they're setting that up, and that's something they're going to be pushing later this year. So definitely get in touch.
Yeah. Before we begin, can I get two things out of the way? Just quickly, quick comments.
Hang on, is this to do with Comic House? I'm just about to finish.
Oh, no, go on. Right, sorry, I thought you finished. Go on.
Yeah, so there's a 14-day free trial. if you use the code Stay Safe, you get an extra month as well. Ignore this advert. Just find out for yourself at comichouse.com. There you go.
Nice. Tony. Nice work. Okay, so this week, on Friday this week, Cliff Cumber was 50. Happy birthday, Cliff Cumber.
Perfect.
And I believe it is today, as we record, that Gareth Hopkins is 40. So happy birthday, Gareth.
Wow. Happy birthday, Gareth.
There you go.
I'm quite happy to put those big birthdays in the group, but there we go. It slipped under the radar. Happy birthday to those two lovely gentlemen.
Yeah.
That was a present in itself, wasn't it, gents? Yeah, hearing Dan say that. They're going to cut that bit of audio and just replay it over and over.
Yeah, it's a ringtone.
Yeah, why not? Now, before we get on and grill our guest like a toasted cheese sandwich. Oh, I haven't had one of them in ages.
Sandwich, that's a bit American, isn't it? Cheese on toast is English, I always think.
Not cheese on toast. I'm talking like a toasted cheese sandwich. You know, like
that's quite an American thing.
No,
isn't it?
In a Breville. Do you know what I mean?
Cheese toasties,
that's probably what you think of.
Yeah. Have you got a soda cream as well?
They don't call them, is it grilled cheese? They just call them grilled cheese.
Grilled cheese. Yeah, it's called grilled cheese. And you get like a sandwich.
Hopefully, Americans, I got that right. Apologies.
If not. As well as a Breville, have you got a soda siphon as well? Or, you know,
soda siphon? Soda stream. Oh, my God. do you have a soda siphon? Isn't that what the commoners are drinking these days? They're carbonated beverages.
They came back into fashion recently, didn't they?
Yeah, they came back. Hipsters.
Yeah. Tab Clear will never come back, though, will it?
Sadly not.
What do you mean, sadly not?
Ooh. I like cream soda. You ever heard cream soda? That's nice.
Yeah, that's still about. So
swinging it around to comics.
Sorry. What was it? Comics. Tony. Yeah. Before we kick in, Tony, you've been actually out and about like for the first time in a while.
Yes,
I have. Yeah.
Well done. We just want to congratulate you on that. Yeah. Jesus.
I'm just showing off in front of the guest. That's all it is. So I went up. So I've become a bit stir crazy, as we all have. So I thought I need to get out. And I saw that Strange Apparitions in Spalding in Lincolnshire was open. They had an appointment system. Well, you have to book an appointment on there. So I booked an appointment on there to go and have a look around the
shop. On their website or Facebook?
Yeah, on their website, which is all coming to an end on the 4th, so it won't be forever. Okay. Alex messaged me and said, no, you don't, no, not half an hour, you're coming up for an hour. I want to see you. And he's a listener and he's a good lad. And
hello.
Hello, Alex. And I dropped a few quid in the shop, to be fair. and we had a long chat.
Quid.
And then we had a long chat about comics, non-stop, and talked about, you know, everything. But he is, it's a great shop, man. Really good. I bought loads of out-of-print trades, which and some loads of sort of comic magazines like Epic and, you know, Vampirella and stuff like that that I was missing. There's some really good stuff in there. But what he is looking for, he's looking for some small press comics to stock. Now, he's not... he's a growing shop, but he's small but growing, I suppose, is the way to put it. Mm-hmm. But he's, so he can't really afford... If he gets inundated with comics and they don't sell, he can't really afford to send them back to you. I think that's sort of a lost financial deal there, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you contact him and you and he accepts your comic and you can stick an envelope inside your post so he can send them back to you when, you know, if you don't sell a couple. Say you send him four, you don't sell one, you're going to want it back, aren't you, you know?
I think that's a great idea just moving forward for any, yeah. anyone, really, because, you know, there is certainly a lot of comic book stores that they're all up for getting more fresh comics that they can shout out about, and they want, you know, we've talked to so many people that just want to beef up their small press section. But like you say, it is that, especially now, you know, people can't just walk into a store. And they, for instance, for like people like us, we can't exactly just pop up to somewhere in Glasgow or something, a comic book store, you know, we can't just drop in. So, I really like that idea of, yes, I know, yes, you're going to have to pay for your own postage to send it back, but it's well worth it in the meantime,
yeah.
I think
I know, for example, DC shops pay for 50% of the cover price, don't they, for DC? Yeah. I don't know how he wants to do it. I mean, something like that might be sensible. Mm. He's stocking your comic for you. But, yeah, it's a good little opportunity. And I think we need to start reaching out to shops like that, you know, who have got a bit of goodwill. Don't take advantage. Got a bit of goodwill about selling comics. Yeah. He pointed to a spinner rack and said, I want to put them in that spinner rack. And I think that's an ideal place to have them.
That's fantastic.
It's a great shop. It's half toys, half comics, which is okay with me. I was okay with that. But there's loads of old comics in there. He's got a real eye for, you know, classic. I bought some, well, you name it, I bought it, to be fair. Some Joe Sinnott, like, God bless him, now he's passed away. I bought a book on him and stuff like that. And it's an interesting site because it's in a big sort of warehouse size place. He's next to a shop that sells vinyl. Records rather than toys, and that is next to a garden centre. And if you want a place that's got footfall at the moment, I'll tell you what, it's a garden centre. And he's got a space next door, a little hall where he's going to run events, and yeah, it's good, man. It's all right. Yeah, it's a real felt fresh going back into a comic shop after so long, and having someone who wants to talk to you about the comics you're holding, someone wants to point other comics out to you, someone wants to talk about the future of what he's going to stock and stuff. I really enjoyed it, man. Yeah, really good stuff. Yeah. So it's at Strange Apparitions Shop on Instagram is how I get hold of him. But he has got a website which you can link to from the Instagram account. Yeah.
Awesome, there you go. Stuff. It's great to hear, like, comic book shop owners have actually heard of this show and listened to it.
Loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
I mean, what do you think, guys, about that? What do you think about... I mean, what kind of hit would you take on an issue to drop into a shop?
Think right now, I mean, this is, you know, obviously I've never had a bustling MCM type business. Do you know what I mean? You know, with me, it's just about getting comic book into fresh hands beyond the bubble of those we know or people that listen to on the show. You know, if you picked up our work, thank you very much. But those people that have just wandered in to a shop and never heard of me or the creators I'm working with, never heard of the podcast, have just picked up just because it's a comic that looks cool. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, that's the ultra buzz, the brand new sort of readers and stuff. That's why whenever anyone picks up or checks out anything, just said, oh yeah, I picked this up the other day. It's the same with the podcast. Where it's like, oh, I listened to this because of such and such. Every reader or listener is a massive win, and it doesn't matter where they come from.
We got to start thinking that way, man. I think we got to start thinking about reaching outside of the bubble.
Mm.
We with Atomic Hercules, we were very lucky that we got some nice shout outs on an American podcast, 11 O'Clock Comics. Love those guys. And over 50% of our sales were to America.
Yeah.
It's difficult with postage and stuff, but Adam knows his stuff and we gauged it right, so we didn't lose. But what we've since had since then, we've had three sort of small distributors from the States reach out to us and say, would you like us to distribute your comic in the States?
That's fantastic.
So, yeah. So we've got to start thinking about how we get that in their hands. And that's where, I hate to tell it, say this, folks, but that's where the market is. The market ain't in the UK anymore. Right. There's not enough sales over here to support any kind of publishing venture. You've got to reach out to the States and you've got to, you know, reach out to foreign sales. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
So we've already sent bundles out to American comic shops, you know, who we've reached out to, you know, who've liked it and seen it and heard about it. We got a review on Kayfabe. Like Adam called me and his heart was in his mouth because I really like the Kayfabe podcast, but Adam fucking loves it. And he was like, when they said, oh, we got some comics from Anarchy in the UK, I think is how they introduced our comic. And he says, oh my God, he says, and my heart was in my mouth. You know, wait to hear what they were going to say. And it was very positive. And since then, we've had a good number of orders since that went out. One England, all the rest America. Yeah.
Wow.
Brilliant, so you've got to reach out, man. You've got to reach out beyond what... None of this like, oh, well, there's... As much as I love all these conventions, there's more to the world than Thought Bubble, LCAF, MCM. Yeah. You know, there's more to the world than just that. You've got to think about reaching out there.
And you do have to think about reaching out beyond the bubble of what you think your comic is. Just say, you know... hypothetical creator who thinks, you know, they've written a very intelligent, quite highbrow graphic novel. and, you know, it's going to be perfect in this sort of store. We all know the sort of stores that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But if they're only focusing on those artisan kind of stores, they'll only get that kind of crowd. And then
they won't even make their money back, man.
They won't make their money back. Whereas, you know, they're creators who have probably been influenced by people doing similar work and getting bigger audiences. But that's because these creators have been more savvy. You know, they're doing their own thing, but they're also aware of the markets where this is going to do well. You know, you don't get mentioned for Eisner's or all these huge, you know, there's sometimes like, you know, independent comics that I read, I just think, bloody hell, I thought I was just a small, you know, UK indie book and it's nominated for an Eisner. Why is that happening? Because people have been savvy and have got it into the right hands, into the right people.
And I think watch out for growing social media. So we all did it when Instagram, 10 years ago, however long Instagram's been going.
Yeah.
There's this parlor thing that's popped up, which is there's a lot of comic people on there now. Have a look at that. You know, I put my comic on VK recently just because I thought, get some Baltic Russian eyes on it, and there's loads of great illustrators on there, man. I put the podcast on there, and I put my pod on there as well, and I got loads of upticks from those countries.
Brilliant.
You got to think about where you're doing it, and we're fucked if all we think is I'm going to release the comic in Gosh, the usual people will turn up, drink the free beer, and then you'll sell 5 comics. You know, like, Christ's sake, think about what else there is in the world.
Goddamn.
Get more of a creative team when there's. I find it tough when there's just me creating this stuff. I've complained about this before. Like, you've got to be fucking everything, like the writer, artist, and then marketing, and then get it sent out. It's almost like a full time job in itself, isn't it? Or it could be.
Yeah,
but everyone pays bills.
Oh, it is. No, brother, there's 2 or 3 people doing it. Yeah,
like a comic, including me. You know, even there's lots of people out there who want their comics to be movies. You shameless whores. And I include us in that because we're shameless whores.
I'm just a whore. I have some shame, but I'm just a whore.
But, you know, comics and movies, you know, they're obviously very different media, but also a comic is not a opening weekend sales thing. A comic is an ongoing job.
Yes, yeah, I mean,
and that's why, you know, you see the drop off between issue 1 and you know, and issue 6 and things like that. You know, everyone talks about the issue 1. Everyone talks about the issue 1. If everyone's still talking about you, issue 24, you are a rare fucking beast. And that goes for, there are so many titles that we've talked about that we follow for years. You know, all these huge titles that have finished 60 issue runs, you know, or done all these sort of things. But they've just chipped away and just been, you know, a lot of the time when they get to 60 issue runs, they've done that by some miracle under a radar, haven't they? You know, so some of these books that are now classics, you know, a lot of the Vertigo titles. I know there's one that's going to be talked about later by Mr. Butcher that we won't spoil yet, but we're looking forward to talking about this. That got to a 60 issue run. Yeah. And that, wow. But okay. it wasn't like every time it was like, oh my God, you know, the new issue of this, the new issue of this, the new issue of this. It just kept doing it, and everyone knew how good it was. And it just kept going. It didn't make a song and dance. It was just, you know, it was like someone who's just really aware. It's like a martial arts person. A martial arts person who's really fucking good and can kick your ass won't tell you that they can kick your ass. They'll just kick your ass if you start on them. Do you know what I mean?
I wonder a lot. I think a lot about comics publicity and stuff, you know, and pushing it into people. And I think there obviously is that fine line. We don't want to be shameless again, you know, in our pushing comics. And I find that really embarrassing a lot of the time and quite cringeworthy.
It's fireworks marketing, isn't it? It's sort of like a big loud bang and then...
And it puts me off people, man. It puts me off it when they're doing all that idiotic TED Talk bullshit. Somebody's read a book about sales or something, you know. But the what I do think is I don't think in some cases there's enough of it. We all are on all manner of social media. Could you tell me what Marvel comics come out this week? I mean, these should be selling much more. Empire came out this week. We'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
Empire came out this week. I thought it had come out already because I saw an advert for it ages ago, but it hadn't. Dan said it's out this week, and I realised it was. And then it's like, where's the marketing for that, man? Yeah. Where is it on social media? Where is it on Facebook? Where is it? You know, it might be, but I haven't fucking seen it.
Yeah.
I didn't even see it from a Marvel account. Someone mentioned it. I was like, what the fuck? I was like, fucking hell.
And like the emphasis is a lot on like the individual creators who are doing these books as well. Sometimes they, you know, just like the independent circuit as well, they have to shout as loud as they can about their books all the time. Otherwise,
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, man. I'm talking to Emanuela about this Malaria, about the Horizon Cafe, and she's saying what kind of marketing budget. And I said, I don't really think we get, you know, Marco's, you know, a small company, don't they? I said that it's on us, you and I. We're the ones who get this into people's faces by showing how much we love it and we've enjoyed making it and you know, we're putting it out there. So that's what's starting tomorrow, is the push to get that book into people's faces now.
Yeah. It's a real art, though, isn't it, to sort of market yourself in a positive way as well, so that the people, you know, because there are those, we've talked about the hard sells, that you don't push your book into people's hands. Shout about it, be proud of it. And then just be positive and be nice. I mean, just be good people.
Enthusiastic, man. Enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I was looking through some Twitter before we came on. I hate myself because I promised myself I would only look at messages. But apart from getting trolled by Johnny Cannon and the Russell Olsen, who keep finding pictures of me on television, people I look like saying them to me. I was scrolling through some Twitter accounts of people with comics that have just come out. And they are all to a person going on about the political situation at the moment. And I couldn't find the comic. I was looking to buy one of them. And I just scrolled through and through and through and I couldn't find anything. You know, you got positivity and enthusiasm for your comic. That's what you know.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying last week. You know, we were talking about the branding stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, if you're running a comic account, have it about the comic account.
Yeah.
And
keep
your political opinions, etc. A separate account if you do that.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of fucking it up. I don't mind telling you.
Yeah, no, we all are, man. Yeah, we all fall into that trap. I think the thing is as well, I think just to sort of see what you guys think about it, but if you've got a comic shop near you, contact them, see if they'll take your comics on sale or return, and spread the love, man. And with comics like being imported, not being imported, these comic shops would love to have a fresh variety of stock for the weekly Wednesday Warrior. And if it's a copy of MI666 or Vanguard or Griff Gristle or, you know, Resurrection Men or, you know, Atomic Hercules, whatever it's going to be, to in their faces when they arrive. And they know that it's not costing them anything to stock that book. You know, and if they sell it, they will be making some money out of it. They're going to bite your hand off. And share the love with everyone on the group, like we just did with Strange Apparitions. You know, you've got to do it.
Yeah.
Well, funnily enough, I was just talking to the owner of my little comic shop in Truro, Basbo. And I'm talking about one of the books that I'm going to be kickstarting eventually. It's almost there now, ready to go. And I've offered them, said, would you guys like a whole page advert in there? Now, you don't have to pay for it, but you just, I'll reserve a page in the book. You get your advert all printed up, ready to go, or, you know, send me the file, and then it'll be part of the comic. Just to give them a little extra boost, you know, because they're always putting books on the shelf for me and stuff. And
Yeah, good stuff, man.
We got a good little relationship going. I thought it might be quite nice just to turn around and stick an advert for the shop in the book itself.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's great. Yeah, I know Steve Sims of Battle Badgers. He's done one for his sort of. I think that's great that you're doing that, Rory. And like, it always makes me smile whenever I see things like that turn up in stores. You know, I could be 150 miles away, but I'm like, get a nice one. I hope that gets people into that shop.
And I'll tell you who else. Oh, cool. And I'll tell you who else is Comic House. If you're doing well off Comic House, he's putting a lot of effort in there. Put a Comic House advert in there. It will spread the love and it will get more sales for your comic as well. Likewise. Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It feeds itself. And that's, you know, that's the only way we're going to make it, folks. If you're in it for the long game, then you've got to be prepared to just be good people, I think, at the end of the day.
Yep.
Because in this world, you can't be a dick and get away with it. So
you can't, can you? No. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I have, but you know.
Yeah. Well, you know. You're not going to be on the next episode. Oh!
Yes. Oh! See, you said he'd start threatening me with that, Dan.
Anyway, so wherever you are, if you're in an indie comic book store and you're listening to this show, we are fucking rooting for you in every way we can, because you're fighting a good fight. And
where's Dan gone? He's muted.
Is he muted himself? He's I don't know.
Sorry, I muted myself.
Oh, okay.
Oh, sorry, Dan.
I was entering some details onto Parler. Finally, I can tweet my love for Trump and all things.
It does seem a bit Trump heavy. I don't know. I think it's normalizing. I've put onto a newspaper thing I read today, and a lot of people are on there, so it should normalize a bit, I think. But it's going to be a bit Trumpy to start with.
Really?
Oh, God. That's
hilarious. Yeah, the talk is that Trump's prepping it because he's going to move there when he gets banned off Twitter.
Let's get off of this horrible subject.
No, I just gone in there to claim the name on there. That's it.
Yeah.
So if it starts blowing up.
Yeah. It'll be because Dan's on there now.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. I might fuck everything up by going on. Everyone's going to follow me over.
Well, there you go.
He's
like the Pied Piper. Nations. Yeah, he's like the Pied Piper of comics, Dan Butcher.
Pied Piper of crap.
But I tell you what, from one person who works extremely hard on comics to another, because Rory, we were talking a little bit about the amount of titles that you've done.
Yeah.
Obviously, this show's been going for 5 years.
Yeah, is it next week? It's 5 years.
I think it is. Wow. Yeah, next week it's 5 years. I think.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I think it's like the 6th or something. But Sunday is the 5th. So yeah.
I didn't have grey hair when I started this show.
You had a beard.
Did I? Yeah, I did. Yeah, bloody hell. Time changes, doesn't it? But obviously, you've done an awful lot of work in that time, Rory.
It seems like
you're a busy boy.
Yeah.
It appears so. I'm not quite sure. You've got something to do with your days, I suppose, you know?
That's true. But how did you get started, I mean, A, in comics, and B, like, finally just getting stuck in and drawing comics?
The shortened version of it would be I was sat on the sofa, bored out of my skull one afternoon, and I saw an advert on Twitter for a seminar that was being held at the Guardian offices. I think it's at King's Cross, is it? Around there? I don't really know.
Victoria, wasn't it?
Victoria. Was it right? Okay, yeah. And it was a one-off. It was about how to draw and sell graphic novels or something like that. And being stuck down here in North Cornwall, you know, you don't have much of a access to this kind of stuff. So I just bit the bullet and thought I'll go and have a little look. I enjoyed the seminar. It was really interesting. Steve Appleby was on there. It was by Paul Gravatt, I think his name. Yeah.
Paul Gravatt. Yeah. Stephen Appleby, possible future guest, spoke to me this morning.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. He was very inspirational. Just the whole feeling of being in around those people for the first time who do it as a job, you know, and love it, was it just rubbed off on you. You know, as soon as I got home, I was then looking for this kind of look at a Comic Con. I've never been to one of them, and that was the first time I went to London Super Comic Con, where I think it was the one where John Romita was there. That kind of blew my mind as well. So my first two entrance points were quite big hitting moments that just stuck with me and made me think, I think I need to look at this. And while I was walking around the floor on that first London Super Comic Con, I had two messages come through on my phone via Twitter. One was from Rob Jones asking if I wanted to do a little story called Cast Adrift in Paper Cuts and Ink Stains. And another one was from Neil Sandbrook, wanted me to do a little two-page thing, End of Days, I believe it was called, in his book, The Terrible Torments of Terror or something like that. I can't remember.
And
Tales
and
of
these
Terror.
These were both Madius comics.
The first one was Madius, but Neil Sandbrook's, his is his own thing at the time. I think they were called Fly Comics.
Oh, I know Neil. Yeah, no, I love Neil. Yeah, he does good stuff, man. Yeah.
So, but both of their both of their messages came through as I was walking around the floor, thinking this is what I want to do. So by the time I got home, I was already up and running. Then really, and then Rob obviously got back to me after we did Cast Adrift and said, "Look, I like the stuff. I wouldn't mind devoting a sort of whole book title to you to your style if you're in for it." And him and Mike Sandbrook got together and come up with Griff. And then as soon as that happened, Resurrection Men 1 came in on the table at the same time as well. So, and that was my first sort of entry point into social media.
Right.
I should add. Okay. So as soon as I put my name up there and sort of try to sussing it out, because I'm a bit of an old fart, so I was taking a while to work it out. And once I had, I was suddenly getting these like offers coming in to draw comics. So that's pretty much how I got rolling with it, and it didn't stop.
Where did your sort of like passion for comics start then? Because it sounds like, you know, you walked in and all of a sudden you were getting job offers immediately. But obviously, obviously, like you've been, I take it you've been drawing and into comics since.
Since I was little. The same stories you hear on here quite a lot, actually, from a fair few other guests that you'd go to newsagents, you'd pick up whichever copies you could get your hands on.
Yeah.
They never sort of flowed. You picked a story up one week and the following month it was something completely different, but you loved it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'd have my regular Beano as well as a Litlin. I used to come on a Thursday with a bag of sweets. It was like fantastic Thursday, you know, you can't beat it. And then after that, we have that little period that we all seem to go for, a lot of us did, where they sort of phase out slightly for a little while. There's a little sort of blank area in my youth where I suddenly realised that comics had come back into my life a little later. And that was via a Daredevil comic, because I'd been a big fan of Daredevil from the early ones. So I used to pick up the Mighty World of Marvel or whatever it was.
That 8-year
copy. And
so it was Gene Colan. Barry Windsor-Smith.
And the very story was Nobody Laughs at the Jester, I believe it was called.
Which was kind of the Daredevil version of the Joker.
And he was attacking him with yo-yos and stuff. And it was just fantastic. Anyway, and I was then spotted in the newsagents as a sort of grown, airy teen. There was a Daredevil comic, number 304, which I've got next to me now, called Time Marks, A Cry for Help. I think it was Ron Garney was on pencils.
Oh, class.
Chichester was the writer. Nice. Yeah, and it was just, and it was a little single story in one edition. So after picking that back up, it sort of reignited everything. I was like, why did I stop reading these? And that was it then. I was back up and running. And I also picked up a book the same week, funnily enough, in a cheap book sale. It was Valerian and Loreline, Volume 8. I believe it's called Heroes of the Equinox. I've never seen anything like it. You know, it was fantastic. And I think it was about a quid.
That's good. That's a great series.
It was like, oh, so it's not just the American books. I like these as well.
That's pretty rare that you managed to get hooked on that. Around that time, most of the comic books in the UK that we get access to are mostly American stuff, isn't it, when it comes to the more mainstream things.
I'm surprised there's a very clever reviewer who once referred to you as the small press Mignola. I'm surprised there wasn't a little quote of Mignola there, dude. Did you discover him later, or was he somebody?
I discovered Mignola very late. Because I was into Gabriel Bay, or Ba, I'm not sure how you pronounce his second name. I kind of came into Mignola via him, because I was buying all of his stuff that I could get.
Oh, the vampire stuff they did on
They pulled me into Vampire and the BPRD thing that he did. And then I sort of saw Mignola's Hellboy stuff and thought, oh, this is also quite nice. And then I saw that Gabriel had obviously been influenced by Mignola's work, and I'd been influenced by Gabriel's work, so I kind of came in via that way, really.
Is he the one that did Casanova?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he did Day Tripper, if you've read that. That's one of my favourite books.
Day Tripper, one of the few books. I think I had a bit of a tear in my eye at the end of that one.
Me too, man. Yeah, me too.
I'm not familiar with this one.
Yeah, it's hard to explain it because it kind of ruins it a bit, doesn't it? There's an element of people dying in it, but it's not quite what you expect.
Definitely worth the trip through, though. I was glad I picked up when I did. Because he did it with his brother as well, didn't he, with Fabio?
Yeah, Fabio Moon and Gabriel Barr, they're the brothers, aren't they? Yeah. Lovely people as well, man. Really nice.
Oh, I'd love to meet him. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic.
They're the hardest fucking comics to review, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't really talk about them much, otherwise it absolutely destroys the experience.
Yeah, it does.
It's funny, because for later on, when you were asking me to pick a recommendation, and I was going through a few of theirs, I was thinking, I don't really want to go on about that one. I wouldn't give it an honorary mention, but I'm not going to talk about it, because they need to be discovered as they are, don't they? You know, when when you've gone from that front cover to the back and you've come out the other end and sat down, as I've heard you say before in the past about other books, then ones that leave you sort of sat there after you put the book down for a few minutes, you need a bit of time just to get your breath back.
Yeah, you do.
Sort of soak it up and think, that was fantastic. Yeah.
Casanova's a book as well. Casanova's,
oh, I love Casanova.
It's the only thing comparable to Jerry Cornelius these days. Brilliant stuff, yeah. There's Matt Fraction, as I remember, isn't it?
Yeah. Funny enough,
that's crazy as well, isn't it, Casanova? Casanova's pretty crazy.
Yeah, because I've got the three hardback collections of those, the volumes, and I gather the fourth one's en route. I think they're just finishing the last trade now, and then it'll obviously be hardback bound.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, that's why I've got them in hardback, yeah.
Yeah. And I've loved them, I must say. They are fantastic.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, so Mignola, obviously, because we are obviously reference always Mignola when it comes to your style. I mean, so when you say you came to him quite late, you had already developed your own style then?
Yeah, this was it. I was already kind of drawing the way I'll draw anyway. Mm. I just hadn't really sort of released it. It was very crude, obviously, at the start, as we all are, I'm sure. And you kind of refine it a bit more as you go along. But I also found myself then picking up hints and tips off of their stuff in ways to tackle a bit of shading in the background, or, you know, if you want to alter something, just bordering on copying, I suppose, you know, because you see it and you think, that's just what I need on my panel, but I don't want it looking like I've just ripped it from his panel. So
the
I'm
use
trying
of
to
shadows and like solid black, you know, large solid blacks and stuff. Yeah.
But I was, because initially I'd have fallen in love with the Sin City books when they were out, and I loved just the harshness of his black and white tones. So I was already using a lot of heavy inks in my stuff anyway. And then when I came across the Mignola stuff and you know, it was like, oh, my God, I've just sort of just now I feel like I'm sat in front of a master and I'm a little puzzled how to tackle mine. But thankfully, I don't think it's altered me too much. I still feel quite confident when I'm drawing it that I'm not pinching him, you know.
And I think practice makes perfect, as it were, and certainly I know I've suffered from this problem where I haven't drawn for a bit, and like you pick up the pen or stylus or whatever it is, and then you try to draw and you're just never happy with anything. But you have been constantly busy, so from the moment you sort of dipped your toe into the comic scene, you've gone under you've gone completely underwater, haven't you?
Well, this is it. I think it was because I sort of worked at jobs that I didn't really want to be at for years, and I was always daydreaming about doing this, you know. There'd be times where I'd be walking to work and I'd decide not to bother, nip into a bookshop, pick up a trade and go sit by a lake or something and read the comic for a day, and then go back home when the end of the work shift had finished, you know, and lost another job. So, and that happened more often than it should have done. So by the time I moved out of Cornwall, I picked up a part-time job thinking, if I can split half the day with doing something I'm not asked about, and then the other half doing what I want to do, as long as I'm bringing in enough to pay the bills and what have you on top, I can really dedicate some time to this and see how I go. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll go back to full time and doing whatever, you know. But it's so far, touch wood, it's still rolling. You know, every morning I get up, even during this lockdown period, because my wife's a key worker, she's been going in every morning. I've still been getting up at 6 a.m. with her. To wave her off, make a breakfast, what have you. And then I'm sat at the drawing table from that point onwards. By about 3 o'clock in the daytime, I'm sort of just about done. And I've produced quite a bit of work, you know. And
you've got to have like a routine.
I'm quite dedicated, you know, I'm quite strict with it. You know, I will keep myself working. I'll be annoyed if I haven't done at least a page in the day.
Yeah. Oh, good man.
Because we must have like people that go, oh, yeah, you draw comics all day. That must be fun. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, but it's also work. You have to treat it like a job. There's going to be times where you probably hate the page you're working on. Let's be honest, we've all been there.
We've all been there.
But, you know, and it is, you know, it is work. It just happens to be the work that we all want to do.
And sometimes, whether it's writing or drawing, you need that thinking time, don't you? You can't just suddenly start drawing a page. It needs to be worked out as well, you know?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's kind of fucked me up in this lockdown is that I've not done as much walking around and like listening to music, thinking. And that's, I feel creatively, that's kind of like knocked you back. Because usually, like, if I have a sticking point in a bit of a script or a page,
yeah,
I'd walk around and it would just jar itself loose in my head and be like, that's how you fix it, or that's what you want to do. Because I'm not doing that, it's kind of like, oh, fuck. Perhaps I should just go for more walks. That's the answer to that.
Yeah, I come up with, it's easy to come up with a script, I think. It's easy to come up with a story idea. But to have that added depth to it, or the little twists and turns in it that you don't expect, you need to give it an extra long thinking time. Because otherwise you're thinking in it about it at the same speed as the reader is thinking about it. And the reader will just guess what you're doing. But if you give it, you know, go back to it and go back to it and go back to it, then you realise the little moments that they don't perhaps realise. You know?
So, what
that's one of the... That's one of the things, you know, Pat Mills said about, like, you're not paid for that time.
And yeah, they're staring out the window.
Right,
There's so much of that you need to kind of work in and think what's going to go in, and you can't say, oh, Superman does this. It needs to be more kind of faceted and more. Yeah. There's more to it.
Yeah, definitely. With your work, Rory, like, when it comes to, dare I use the word, creative block, but when you have those moments where things just aren't necessarily clicking, how do you how do you work around that? Do you take space away from a page for a moment?
Yeah, to be fair, I suppose I've been a bit lucky. I don't tend to have them. I'll keep battling with, you know, if I'll keep battling with a panel and if I'm not happy with it, I've moved on to the next few. And if I keep looking back and it's jarring at me, then I'll replace it at a later date. But, you know, we're still with the same elements going on within the panel. I'll just alter it, and all of a sudden the whole thing falls back into place. It's almost as if the page is telling, no, not like this, not like this, no, don't do this, don't. And you keep going, then you leave it, flip it around, and it's like,
Do you think that's because you're working from scripts from other people?
See, this is what I'm finding interesting at the moment, because I've done my first few of my own scripts that I've been working on during lockdown, and I'm finding the way I'm tackling the page is very different to the way I am when I've had scripts in.
Gotcha.
And I'm not sure if I think one's sort of suiting me better than the other, really. It's just a different approach. You know, with mine, I've already had the pictures in my head while I was writing the script out, because I've got a rough idea what they're doing, you know, so I suppose it's a little quicker. But I've been lucky enough as well with a lot of the scripts of the guys I've worked with, they very rarely ask for any more feedback on it. They just kind of handed it over and then been happy with what's been sent back as a rule.
That's good.
Yeah. Mm. So there's been a lot of freedom in it, I suppose, you know.
That speaks volumes about you, your working methods, your style, because, you know, you've got such a recognisable style. That, you know, if you're hiring Rory Donald for your comic, you know what you're going to get. So, you know, why tell someone like that, could you do this bit a bit more like Jim Lee? Fuck off.
Thankfully, I've never had that. I must admit, I wouldn't know what I'd do with a sort of comic. Can you make it look like someone else?
Yeah.
I think you've got to kind of get that.
Can you afford Jim?
Manage those expectations before the project starts, because if you're right, this is the art style I was looking for in my book, you're all fine. But like when you start turning in pages, then they say, oh, I'm not sure if I like the look of this. That's way too late.
Yeah, because I've always gone on the basis that if they've sort of sought you out to come and do it, they've obviously seen your previous stuff and they've liked the look of it and thought that works well for my script. So I kind of got the impression that they've been happy to leave it with you, really.
And you've had a fairly positive experience with most of your projects. I mean, obviously, you don't have to name any. You know, there's been no creative differences that have led to.
I've had no bumps in the road.
That sounds really negative when you say creative differences, but it could be clearly a case of someone going, I don't think I'm actually the right artist for it, and everyone's friends in the end. But when you hear the words creative differences, you think, oh, they had an argument.
I mean, I can see why it could happen in some places. You know, it's thankfully it hasn't happened to me yet. I can't.
You're a nice bloke.
There's plenty of time. I'm sure I will get up someone's nose eventually.
After this show, that's what it'll be.
It all goes downhill after this.
You say, I would love to employ you, mate, but you went on that podcast, really?
They're just a shill for parlour. I mean,
it's going to be back to sitting next to the lake reading books on my own now without a job.
How's work today, darling? Oh, good,
yeah.
I see our Amazon sales have gone up. Yeah.
Sometimes you've got to kind of like thrash out creative differences if you have them with the writer. If you generally think that a creative decision in the process isn't working, the strength of having two creators on board is that, isn't it? You can sort of, you've got another. I do have different opinions with, say, if I was a writer and I was paying someone to illustrate the comic and that was their involvement. Although I don't mind feedback. What I've given you in the script is what I've given you in the script.
You've got to listen to them to a certain extent, yeah. There's a whole page in Tony Osmond that's Cliff's idea. So, you know what I mean? Yeah. And it worked out well. I'll go with it, you know. Yeah,
because I've gone on the basis as well that if someone's come to sort you out to do their script, in my head I'm thinking, oh, I want to give them the best I can give them that they're going to be happy with. But I also am aware that we've got a time scale where I don't want to have to keep sending pages back and forth. So we try and get it nailed down as quick as possible. And once I've shown all the rough layouts first and that's got a thumbs up, I'll sort of say, okay, I'll do the pencils next and show you one last time. And if you're happy, then I'll just crack on and then ink and colour it after that.
Yeah, it's a lot of it's about the ease of working, isn't it? I know Dave Broughton contacted me once and said, oh, you know, really clear script. Could you mind just writing it just with these bits highlighted and centred so I can see that? And I'm like, yeah, all right, no worries, mate. And he said, it's just easier when I look up and I'm drawing. I only look up for a second sometimes just to make sure I've got the right thing. And if it's written like that way, I said, yeah, fine, man. That's totally ideal for me, you know. Yeah.
So, but the thing, before we get on to your art process, because I want to find out more about this, but you just caught my ear with the fact that you're writing a few things, you're potentially putting things together of your own, creator-owned stuff. What has led to that? And what genre is it, dare I ask?
Well, there's two, actually, that are in the pipeline, and one's turned out to be an all-ages comic, which I didn't even think I'd start writing, really, but it came about that way, and it was the kind of material in it. It didn't lend itself towards anything other than an all-ages, and that was me one. You may have seen, I've put a few bits up over lockdown, because that's Space Boy and the Future King.
Yeah, I like that, man, yeah. Yeah.
It's just a basic little Merlin and Arthur story. Obviously, living here in Tintagel, you're kind of surrounded by it, and it's not been a story that I've ever really known much about. So I thought it might be fun to just to play with it. Is there sort of a meeting of a couple of these strange kids in the village, and the kind of adventures they end up on, with a lot of other characters involved, and it's all set around here. And when I initially did it, it was about 60 pages, and I was going to hopefully produce it as like the same sort of size as an Asterix book. I liked the idea of it being a big, solid, nice, colourful, very bright, primary coloured book. And then I thought, it breaks up quite nicely into three comics. So I've done the first one, which I was releasing page at a time during lockdown on my socials, just in case people wanted something to read while they were bored, stuck at home. I actually put every page up of issue one from start to finish. Issue two I've written, and I'm about to type the script up next week and start drawing that again after I finish Horde.
So where did you put that? Did you put that on your Instagram, or is that just...
I put it on Instagram, Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. I presumed it was just going out to friends and family and a few locals, really. But
We shall put a link in the show notes, as always.
Oh, lovely thing. It was just a test of water, really, see what people thought. I did the lettering on it as well, which I've never ever done, and I sort of had to ask Rob a few things to make sure I was on sort of roughly the right ground. But it was more of an experiment just to see how it unfolds. I'm not sure it's 100% how it will come out in the printed version yet, but I am thinking of running it as a Kickstarter, with the idea that I may end up actually having the other two done and maybe launch it as a triple pack. I don't know if that's going to be a bit ambitious. It might be a bit ambitious. Yeah, well, I figured if a lot of people had already read the first one now, they may mainly be interested in looking at the second one. And I thought if the first one's already in the pack with them, well, maybe that could be one of the reward tiers, perhaps, I don't know. Yeah, I'm still playing with it. But issue one will be coming out. And then the other one I'm working on is a story called Incomers of the Bloated Goat. the Bloated Goat being the name of a pub. I've just renamed our pub that I work in. And the idea is there's a kind of team that work in the pub in their everyday jobs. But there's also another side to them that they're kind of like dimensional cosmic border patrol. The pub itself has been built where it is in this dimension, but that there's a very close neighbouring dimension that crosses over now and again, and it happens to be at the end of a wormhole where the pub is, that certain creatures and things sort of turn up in North Cornwall every now and again. And these
sort
guys...
of crossroads dimensions kind of thing. There's a great book from First Comics from years ago called Munden's Bar, which is where Grimjack used to go and get a lot of his work from, you know, to meet shady individuals in this bar, and that was a bit like that. And I love that, man. It's a great storytelling technique if you want to introduce new characters. And
because I found that if you're working in a pub, especially where there's a lot of holiday traffic through, you get to meet and see a lot of very different types of people coming in and out, and they're all very interesting. You're wondering what the stories are, what they're doing, you know. And
does that include wankers from London? Is that the
there may be a couple stuck in there, you know, just to balance up the cosmic problem. But yeah, there's a few little twists in it which I don't want to dive into now, but that's literally just at the scripting stage at the moment. I've kind of had the story bouncing around for ages, in fact before I started most of the comics, but the Griff Gristle's stuff kept coming in at a regular pace. Number four's on its way at some point. The script's supposed to be coming in any day now. And Resmen was running alongside it. So every time I had a script for Griff, I also had a script for Resmen coming in just off the back of it. And then I'll do one, drop that, pick up the next one. And one time I finished that, the next one was coming in. So after about 3 or 4 years, I think, I still hadn't picked up my own scripts. So, it's been nice to have this lockdown period to sort of start
good stuff,
putting some flesh on the bones.
Yeah. Nice that you've got that rolling in constant. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, and rightly so, man. Yeah. Love your work.
Just nice to practice, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and you're doing lots of work, but obviously, since jumping in, how has your experience of like the independent comic community and like, you know, the UK scene and everything? Because obviously, like, we've seen you sort of just take off over the past few years, and so like you say, you've been doing it 4 or 5 years now, which is pretty much the length of this show. So how have you viewed the scene with its ups and downs? Naturally, it's not all been
it's been interesting because, again, being from where I live, you do feel a little bit cut off from the rest of the country anyway. So you kind of feel like you're out the loop of everything that's happening. But you're not. And when you start just getting past that first gate, your podcast actually was the very first sort of introduction to a wider world, as it were, listening to recommendations and listening to all the guys that you knew. And then I'd look them up on Twitter and think, oh, right, brilliant. I like this and I like that. And you start following, and then you start making this big network up of people that that you then end up meeting at cons. And then you're having a beer next to them and a laugh. You know, and then you're talking about potentially working with each other on something or other, you know, and I'd say my overall experience has been, it's been bloody awesome.
All these people all there, I think just the podcast didn't bring us together, but we found out about each other, and then suddenly we're all like in a little community. As much as I loathe using the word community,
but
there's communities everywhere nowadays. But it is a community. Massive, but there's big fellow careers out there.
Yeah, and you know, as what felt like an outsider coming into a party that was already up and running, and you kind of step into it and you're like, man, I know all these people in here now through their work on, and I know them through social media. I mean, good example, when I arrived at Thought Bubble Just Gone, and you're all in that big fancy hotel, Majestic. On the opening night, and I walked in there because my hotel was next door, and I'd had a long journey up from Cornwall. It'd taken about 10 days. And I'd got in there and I had no idea who was it. I didn't even know you guys were all in there. I didn't know anyone. I just thought, that sounds lively. I'm going to have a little nose in and have a quick beer before I go to bed. And I walked in and I heard my name called out about 4 or 5 times before I even got near the bar. And I started looking around the room, my eyes were focusing, and I suddenly clicked, and the entire bloody industry's in here.
It really was that night.
This is incredible. Yeah, it really was. And then I'm still talking to you guys by the lift, and there's Dave Gibbons stood behind me trying to get in the lift. And I'm in his way, like, you know, oh, sorry, buddy. And then I look around again. Shit.
We get in everyone's way.
We were kind of stuck in the corner for that one, V. Just being like a series of people coming over for a chat, which I think was you as well, Rory.
I kind of drifted in and said hello, and then I wanted to catch John late at the bar quick because my wife had banned me from drinking with him at any time, because only from his photo. Sorry, John, but only from his photo, she said he looks like he's in trouble with that one. She was laughing. She was more than happy for me.
It's not just his photos; it's him in general.
See, it was shortly after that that Sadaka from That Comic Smell led us into a dark car park, wasn't it, Vince? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. God.
What happened there? I've lost all sense of time.
My memories are gone for that night.
So, yeah, I would have to say, I think that, as you say, reluctant to use the word community, but very welcoming, very encouraging. I mean, Gustavo came up to me at the bar and Aaron was really pumping me up with some good comments about me work and stuff, you know, and it was a little overwhelming after a while. You sort of stand there thinking, this is incredible. Yeah. I had no idea that this party was already existed, and now I've walked into it and everybody's really receptive and chatty and you know, most of us are a bit introverted. And
correct me if I'm wrong, okay, because I could be wrong on this. All this has happened, and you've never tabled at a convention, have you?
No, yeah, I don't like looking at that. That looks like hard bloody work, that.
It is, man. It's tiring.
I see your faces.
See the wankers you get coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. They come up, they hog a bit of table space in front of you, they block all your product, they stand there chatting shit to you, and you're trying to sell books. I've seen the disappointed looks on your faces.
Or just a look of pure anger, if you're down.
But no, I've got to be honest, I've chewed over thinking I would probably table once I've got a back catalogue of purely my own stuff, because I was under the impression, I thought I didn't want to have a table two tables up for Madius selling Madius books when they've already got their table loaded up. And then I've got, you know, Blue Fox Comics that I've done a couple of pieces for with Simon Burks, and he's always at these. And you know,
surely there are some shows you must have had people from those people going, do you want to pop behind the table, you know, sign some books?
That's been happening actually. When I have stopped by to say hello, and there's been a customer sort of stood there, or potential customer stood there with the book in the hand, and then Rob's college or whatever, and he said, oh, the artist is actually here right now if you want to sign and blah blah. And, you know, so I've been kind of involved in it in that way, but without all the expense of tabling.
Gotcha.
The expense, yeah.
I remember seeing True Believers, people came over from Sam George London, and I was signing Project Hoax. It's still an odd experience to sign comics like that, but there we go. Now, everyone wants to get three signatures on a awesome comic. That's the collector's thing, isn't it? Have all four issues with all three signatures. Not many of them floating around.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
don't know why I find that funny.
Why the laugh?
No, I don't know.
So I'm chewing back thinking, I'm pretty sure I've got one that's got a derogatory comment about Vince in it.
The thing is, right, if you've got one of those issues and you think this might be worth something, it won't, because they've all got derogatory comments in because of Tony. If you've got the nice comment, that's the one that's worth something.
Oh, that's the one.
Yeah. That's the golden ticket. That's Wonka's golden ticket.
I probably thought you were Vince's mum or something coming over, and I was just being careful, you know. My favourite thing is to write thanks for the heroin in the new one. That's what I do now. So, thanks for the heroin, Tony. So it makes it look like you've given me heroin. That's good.
What? Is that Atomic Hercules, though?
Yeah, put that in there.
Yeah, because if you were being horrible about me in that book, it wouldn't make any sense. That would just be you being horrible.
Thanks for the heroin, Vince. You know, I wouldn't write that in just random comics. Because that would implicate you in a Class A supply. Yeah.
That one would be the Holy Grail copy then.
Yeah.
Well, I've got that fucking message in that Punisher comic I got secondhand. Do you remember?
What's that again?
God, this is a massive callback on like an episode we did ages ago. I can't see it on my shelf at the moment. Basically, there used to be a comic shop that sold secondhand comics down on... What's that shop that road that Gosh is on? The market.
Yeah, I know you mean.
Barrett Street. Like, and I bought like a secondhand trade of Punisher. And at the back, there's some bloke's written like some girl's number saying that she's like well up for it.
Did you ever call it?
I can't remember what the message is. No, I didn't call it. No.
Okay.
It'd been disengaged or whatever.
That's not a bad idea. I might start putting Vince's number in saying he's well up for it and then signing it. Yeah. And
heavy breathers only.
If you fall for that, folks, then...
We should get a throwaway phone, right? And just say, look, I'd love to hear from you. You know, do you fancy some sexy types? And then just Vince, put Vince. Pounds, yeah, and then we'll put that number in it. We could put it in as an advert. That's good.
Do you see...
always with the big marketing ideas. That's marketing.
Galaxy Brain Marketing.
Yeah.
God. Anyway, thankfully we've got a guest to save me this week. Now, we've obviously talked a lot about your art, but I want to know about your process, because you have a very clean line.
Right.
Do you work digitally, or is it all pen and ink? Or
it's it varies really. Most of the time now, I've been drawing the blue pencils on the iPad, just so I can keep refining them and get them right. And then it's very depending on the time restraints, because so far, touch wood, I've come in under deadline every time, and I'm kind of trying to keep that rolling, because I think that'll build a good reputation for being reliable and all the rest of it. But there's been the occasion where I've printed off the blue pencils and then hand inked on top, because it'd be nice to have some pages to sell eventually at some point. And I've given some away as little presents and stuff. You know, I tend to give the writer a little something when a project's been successful. So yeah, it varies, but on the whole, I think I've probably gone probably 75% digital at the moment, just because of the time restraints really.
Okay.
Blimey. Cool. But how are you finding that? Obviously with the time restraints, but how are you finding, like, because it is a bit of a jump going from physical to digital.
It is, yeah. And I've got to be honest, because when you walk around a con, and especially when you've got some of those sellers that have the big professionals art pages in their folders, you know, you can stand there flicking through some of the biggest names in comics and their works right there in front of you. And you're looking at the ink line thinking, actually, this is what I want to be doing. I want to be inking. It's that smell, that look, that feel, everything about it. And so when you get back to drawing on a bit of glass, it feels a little odd. But I kind of like what it brings to the game as well, the way you can zoom in and alter stuff slightly. You can just bring up the picture and change a particularly annoying little bit and then push it back and see how it works. And
The undo is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. The idea of rubbing a hole into your page because you've got it wrong four or five bloody times and it's driving you up the wall is... I don't really miss that. But...
No. But there's pros and cons, because, like you say, like seeing an original page of art, like whether you've done it yourself or someone else, and just seeing just the richness of the blacks and the feel of the paper,
it triggers something in your head, you know. And I think that's we're all kind of chasing that dragon. Trigger that we get when we pick up a when we pick up a book that we've really liked, or some work, someone's art page that has really blown us away, and then the stories backed it up as well, and has been even, you know, just as amazing, and you kind of walked away with that feeling. I think we're all, when you're creating it, you feel like you're kind of chasing that little moment that you want to feel what you felt, or sorry, you want other people to feel what you felt when you picked up a book and made you go, wow.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
if you could trigger that in one person, I think you succeeded, haven't you?
Yeah. Do you think this is a question for everyone? Has the world of commissions and things like that had a bit of a boom since digital? Now, I say that I know people do digital commissions, for instance, but with people doing less and less original artwork pages, and certainly there are artists who work predominantly digitally, but you can have a watercolour commission from them. You know, you can have all of this. Do you think that, you know, because people can't get original art pages...
I think that's the crux of it, man. Yeah, you hit it on the nail on the head for me there. I think the problem is the revenue for a comic page. Say, for example, you get 200 quid for a comic page. Mm. The revenue for actually the physical version of it, you might get another 150 in the sale for that page.
Yeah.
Yeah, so your comic page that's taking you a day is making you 350. If you're doing it digitally, you're not getting it. So I think with comic page rates being something of a mixed bag at the moment, I think some people are doing more commissions than they are doing comics now. And I have to say the commission prices have shot up.
Right.
Really, we talked about this about a year ago. I went to New York, wasn't it? And I think they really have shot up. And I think that is because of the effect of sales of comics, page rates, and also the move to digital. Definitely. Mm. Yeah.
There's more people wanting to make comics, though, especially like I've seen a lot of US creators. I'm on a couple of boards on Facebook, and they're always asking for artists and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for a comic here.
Yeah, there's a lot of people wanting artists, and there's a lot of people want to draw.
Yeah, but also there's a lot of people that want a lot of things, but are they prepared to pay?
Mm. Yeah, you've got to be very careful. I mean, like a blind thing on social media. I've done it, touch wood, I've done it a number of times, got commissions off people I don't know, and they've always done okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a two-way street as well. It's obviously the person looking for artists Are you prepared to pay? If you're an artist looking for work, just have a think about, you know, some people overcharge for what it is. Do you know what I mean? Especially with like commissions, you can make, you know, a lot of people I know, like Tony says, they don't do comic pages because they're just making money hand over fist.
Questions.
You know, especially I would say a lot of artists who are on Instagram who have quite big Instagram followings, and I'm seeing great artwork posted on their, you know, on their feeds all the time because, oh, I did this commission. And because people are checking out their Instagram feeds, they like that. They then commission that artist to do, I don't know, they're in their own character or a picture of their family or something like that. And it just feeds itself, doesn't it? So you know, the only
way. I know a couple of American creators who tour, or certainly they won't be doing it now, but I think the last couple of years, spend their whole year touring comic conventions doing commissions. And they have a very good life out of that. They don't get home much. But they're doing what, 5 or 6 couple hundred quid commissions per day, per, you know, pre-preparing them sometimes. Mm. Yeah, they're doing all right out of it, man. Yeah.
But having original artwork from a creator you admire is...
Yeah. So put it this way, what would you rather, what would you guys have, a commission or a page? What would you rather have?
Page.
Me too.
I think page. A page. Oh, I mean, I'm sat here looking at a original art page I got just recently. And yeah, there's nothing quite like it, I think.
So not to have that, what you've read translated in, you've got the original that page. That's what really sticks for me.
When you have that original page as well, do you immediately seek out the comic or the book that you've got it in
and you
hold them up next to each other?
Yeah, I keep meaning to frame them next to each other or something like that.
Gotcha.
I can. Well, I sometimes buy a second version of it just so I can, you know, have the page nearby. Yeah.
You almost need like a special frame. You know when people get albums and you have like the little...
Yeah.
Yeah, you have like the artwork on the left.
Football shirts and programs is another one, isn't it? Yeah.
Playing devil's advocate, say you as a writer and you as commission an artist to do a piece. Say they're paying $100 a page. One artist does it on paper and can sell it on for more money for, say, another $150, but a digital artist doesn't have that. Would that be in any way something to factor into the pricing? Because, like, if I'm paying $100 for this job, and as a writer,
I'd say no, because I'm paying that person for the art. I don't really care how they do it.
Because even if they're doing the original page, in this day and age, they're scanning it, they're cleaning it up, and they're sending it to you. So you're going to have a digital product anyway, no matter what.
I might factor it in if I know that I'm going to get, say for example, I've got a story and it's got 20 pages and know the artist is going to give me 5 of them, then that does, perhaps.
I mean, like, would a writer, in that case, like I say, I'm just playing devil's advocate, I don't swear words at it. Would you expect, I'm commissioning you to do a 30-page comic, I would like 5 pages. I guess you're saying you'd have to put into the contract before you get going if they're going to be hand drawn. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the etiquette is these days. It used to be that you would get offered a page.
Fair enough.
You know, you've got this writer the job, you got this artist the job, you paid him. You know, might be nice if they offered you a page. I think that's kind of died away, to be fair.
Well, what about when it comes to like selling pages as well? Do you think they should? I think there should be that. There should be a certain amount of a grace period. Like, if an artist has finished the work and the comic hasn't even come out yet, for instance, or it's just come out, there should be a couple of months or something before the original pages. Or
this compares to something we talked about before, which is if you are doing a comic for someone else, don't put every single panel up on Instagram.
Yeah, it's a bit stupid that.
So it ruins the story.
Yeah,
because people are bored with it early.
Yeah, I've got someone doing a bit of work for me, and they asked. And I said, as long as you don't tag me in or tell people what it's about, I'm fine with that. So they want kind of spoilers or whatever.
Yeah, I always cut it down then, and I'll send the panel that I'm hoping to share with the writer first and say, would you be okay if I shared this picture and just put this underneath? You know, yeah, that's fine. You know, go ahead. So it's always good to check.
I think that's the best way, man.
You've got to keep your communication open, haven't you?
Yeah.
And my O2 is virtually all but done. But I've shared very little of that online. Yeah.
I think a lot of artists,
you kill the head of steam you built up.
Yeah, and I think a lot of artists feel that if they're not posting stuff daily, people think they've disappeared and they're not working on anything.
Yeah,
that doesn't work, man, because you can't post everything you draw. Yeah,
that'd be like your boss telling you right at the end of every day, I want you to email me what you've done that day. That'd get fucking tiring very quickly. Even the idea of that is fucking cringy. You kind of got to get around that mindset of if I don't post stuff, people think I'm being a lazy bastard.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people won't even think about you, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you been asked for many commissions, Rory?
A few, but yeah, not many. I tend to get asked if I do them for reward tiers when we're running a Kickstarter.
Yeah, that's a big thing now, isn't it?
Like, seems to boost a few of the bigger bigger prize areas. Not massive, but you know they're enough to sort of take it up into a different level. I tend to offer up 5 commissions a job if I can do them, but they'll be A4 black and white. So you know I don't want to be sort of tied to almost a comic's worth amount of time after I finish the comic, then doing extra pages and stuff because I've got another comic to move on to. It's already in the pipeline, ready to go, sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And these people who say it's a warm up sketch, fuck off. That's not.
It's a warm down sketch. Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't get that. Don't get
warm down sketch. I can kind of understand warm up sketches. Some people might do it. I don't do it. But the idea of a warm down sketch is fucking stupid. You're not exercising.
It's not a row machine, is it?
When people say they do these warm up sketches and they're full on coloured, like these are like $500-$600 commission pieces. Yeah. It's like what? My warm up sketch is just like I don't know, lots of dicks.
Warm up sketch is usually fucking the first drawing up and then
But that's another thing, because when I'll be drawing it, I'll have a sketch pad next to me and I'll be jotting down. I think, Dan, you might mention some time ago that you do a bit of this, that you're drawing it on paper, and if you've sort of captured something the way you like it, you'll then take a scan of that, put that up on, and then keep working at it on there as well then. And so I've got sketchbooks full of all these little rough sketches, which we'd call warm-up sketches, I suppose. But
Because sometimes you can just sort of sketch onto a post-it note, and before you know it, it's like, shit, I think I've actually nailed it. But if you try copying that, it never comes out.
Sometimes you get near the energy.
Yeah.
Taking us briefly back to commission work. If you want to do commission work, tell people you want to do commission work. Say, I've got 4 slots open for commission work, but get in quickly because these go quite quickly. And it might be the first time you've ever fucking done it. But create a sense of urgency. But if you think, I work like commission work, but you don't tell anyone, you're not making an issue of that. Like we were saying earlier about telling people your comics are ready for sale, otherwise people won't ask you about it. Definitely with commission work, tell people, put a tweet out, a post up, or a parlor, wherever it's parlor. That's the running joke of the show. But,
that's a good idea, because they've been fun when you actually get asked to do one, and especially if you're not someone who does them. And then you'll get the request in, and you think, oh, I've never even drawn that character before. This could be fun. And then you look them up, and then you see, and they sort of get you into it, you know.
Spider-Man 2099 and Kingdom Come Superman for Gary, because he's part of his patron awards. And I've never drawn those characters, but it's really fun to do them.
It's good as well, man. Yeah, you were drawing that during the drink and draw the other night, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
We talk a bit about that. We'll talk about that
in a minute.
I get confused because we talked about it briefly before we started the show.
We have so much fun before the show and then we just do this. Obviously, now where can people find your work, Rory, or like find more of your work, but also this Hordes of Surrey Kickstarter, which
I'm back, I'm a friend.
Thank you. This is lovely because I'm really pleased for the writer, Dave Wimbler. It's his first, I believe, and he was a bit, in the communications back and forth. I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but he seemed a little unsure as to whether it would get any traction. He was sort of like, oh, you know how you do. You sort of doubt yourself a little, don't you? We all do it. It kind of come out the gates pretty rapid, I felt. It was...
You've made your target, 105%
I'm just looking at it now. 105 today, so it's hit the target. It's still got about 19 days to go, I think. And there's 18 pages of that left to draw. What's normally happened in the past is the books have already been drawn. Griff Crystal is always a finished product before it goes on Kickstarter, so it's ready to hit the printers. And Resmen's been the same way in the past. And so this one's been a nice change of pace because, he sort of wanted to see if it would fund. And then... I've got a crack on now, so there's that one coming on.
Your cover's lovely for the sky of that sort of. Is that the cover?
That's going to be the cover.
Yeah, that's a beautiful cover. Because a lot, obviously, some people have seen some of your work. There's a lot of darkness to it. There's a lot of shadows or storms or
things. I was looking at a lot of my covers, actually, and they're all very similar. I was starting to get a bit cringy about them, thinking, oh, actually, hold on a minute. I need to brush up on my cover work here, because I don't really, as you know, they're a different game, aren't they? You know, covers. I'm still learning them.
Yeah. Did you want to let us know what it's about, dude? And so I'm just looking at it now. Could it possibly be real? Buried treasure in Surrey. I take it that's not the sort of Croydon end of Surrey, then.
I'm not 100% sure, because I've never been over that side of the country. But
I don't blame you.
No, missing anything.
It seems to be a lot of the map that I had to draw. There was Guildford, Dorking, all that kind of area. It was around there.
Yeah.
He pitched it to me as In Between Us meets the Goonies kind of thing.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. So, is it Dave Wimbler? Is that
Dave Wimbler? Yeah,
Dave's on our group, isn't he? I know he's sort of.
I believe he's joined
us
now. Yeah.
Welcome to the group, Dave.
Yeah,
it's all downhill from here.
We've had a couple of new people joining. You've discovered the pod over the lockdown, and welcome aboard.
Definitely.
Yeah. So as we speak, the Kickstarter's successful.
That was successful and going,
Pledge it, because you're going to get it.
You got a while, You got a few more days left, haven't you?
18 days as we speak.
18 days to go.
You're not even halfway through, dude. You passed the mark. That's good.
Yeah.
You got any idea around stretch goals? Have you been already started thinking about that end of it?
We've just started talking about them, yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's been some extra drawing duties that come off the back of it. He was hoping to get in some of the next edition's sort of teasers. If I can, I will get back to him about it. I'll try and squeeze him in, but I've kind of got two jobs lined up behind this, and I've sort of, you know, separated a little window to get this job done first.
So this will be, a lot of comics do this now, don't they? They have like the first couple of pages from the next issue in the back.
It's a good idea. I'd like to do it. Just time constraints, but it may alter, you know.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah.
You're a supremely busy man. So, obviously, and there's going to be a lot of show notes this week because of the amount of work that we've always done.
Just had two shout outs come in while we've been talking. So, there you go.
So, obviously, this Kickstarter's live. But where else can people find your work? Do you have a website?
I do. I have a website, rorydraws.com. Which I've literally just got the domain name for. I wanted it for ages, and I'd had various names before because I couldn't get any of the domain names that I was after. But I've just got rorydraws.com is my website, and all my social medias are all under rorydraws4, which is the number 4.
Right.
You'll get me on Twitter. I mean,
did your clones have the other three?
Yeah.
But they're all dead now, so that's all right.
Yeah, I was trying to get vanguardcomic.com for ages.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's really annoying when you find out they're not even using the bloody thing. It's just a dead account. Yeah. You know, and it's like, oh, come on.
That's where you want to jump on Parler.
Dan, they're not going to sponsor us, Dan. They're not going to sponsor us.
AstroTurf, your name on there.
Yeah, so... Rory, it's been an absolute pleasure having you this week.
I'll tell you what, it's been a little tick off my my list of it's things to do in my life.
Oh, fuck off.
Honestly, it's made me grin because I popped my podcast cherry with you boys. It was the first podcast I ever listened to.
Really?
Okay.
I didn't even know what an effing podcast was before.
So you listen to us, and then you listen to a proper podcast and just thought, oh, yeah, I can see what they tried to do.
Yeah, oh, my God. Well, that'd be so bad.
Because you guys got me onto Word Balloon as well. I started listening to them. Podcast and all them boys. That's been quite fun. And then loads of us afterwards. You know, there's too many mentioned. I don't want to take up too much of your airtime with them. But, yeah, this was my first podcast to listen to. So I've been a listener for some time. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
I knew you were going to say that.
I knew I had to. Thank you, it's been awesome.
Oh, that's right, man. Great, you just keep putting out the amazing comics. I tell you what, you are a regular. That's what I like, because it just seems like throughout the year, I'm like, oh, Roy's doing another comic. Oh, he's doing another one.
I don't see the point in stopping, really, at the minute. No. Until I'm actually fed up to the back teeth of them, which I can't see happening anytime soon.
He's a perfect guest. And we are looking forward to the day where the world, I mean, that what is normal, nothing will be normal for a very, very long time. But when we can see Rory at a show again. Oh,
Definitely does. Was going to be Thought Bubble this year, obviously. If not, it'll be Thought Bubble next year, I would imagine, because I'll try and make sure, at least if I'm going to get one, it'll be that one.
I can't wait for a convention, man. I'm missing them. I never thought I'd miss them, but yeah, I'm missing them.
Yeah. All those times you complained about them, Tony, and now.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm great company at conventions. You know that. I'm great company. Yeah.
So, what are we doing next? he knows I love him, folks. What shout outs have we got this week, gents? We got a couple, haven't we?
Yeah, we do. Shall I go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Thanks to Al Henderson for the great Tony Osmond piece he's just posted up on Twitter. Made me giggle no end. I can't wait. It's called Plug It or something. It made me laugh. I had to mute myself for a second. The other one, Holly, a graphic novel from Stephen Ingram, is coming soon to Kickstarter. If you know Stephen's work, I've reviewed it a couple of times on here. A really thoughtful creator, part of the Scottish crew. Does some really interesting stuff, well worth looking at. He does a lot of short stories, but I think this is going to be a much longer form graphic novel, which is pretty much ready to go. Hitting Kickstarter any day soon. I've just signed up. You know, you can sign up on Kickstarter to be notified as soon as it comes out. I've just done that. So, yes, that's really good. Yeah, good stuff. Am I too?
Why don't you tell us a bit about Tony Osmond?
That's a coincidence. He was called that. I don't know why. So that drops. Hopefully it's coming. It's getting delivered to me on Wednesday. It's up on the site. So as soon as it arrives, I'll be pressing the live on the Big Cartel and on Tribute Press, and it'll be sent out to you. Yeah, I've got. I think it's £1 for a digital copy and £3.50 for the physical, which is pretty good value, I think.
That's great value.
All of us are in it.
It's a great comic.
Thank you, mate. Cheers. Cumber's fucking performed brilliantly.
He's fucking smashed it on that.
The Cumber magic. I've sent it out to a few people, you know, just
Cumber
for sort
magic.
Of
magic.
Yeah, and I'm over the moon about it, and we're going to go for a second one. And you two are doing pin-ups in the back, along with Rachel Lee Carr and who's the other person?
Kev Cooling.
Kev Cooling, because it is. Kev's done one for me as well. Yeah. So you'll see what the pin-ups are. They're not just pin-ups. So you'll see there's a reason for them. It's all interconnected, folks. Yeah, it's all done with a plan. So have a look for that. I'm over the moon with it, man. I really am pleased with it.
Yeah.
I just think I've hit some great collaborators in the last few years. Prolix, you guys, Broughton, Adam's been brilliant. Mm-hmm. Cliff's been brilliant. Sarah, you know, all the Tom.
We've seen you blossom. I know you've done comics in the past, you know, before. Well, and yeah, this shit that we've been doing for the past 5 years, but you know, me and Dan have just seen you really just sort of just go for it, get stuck in and making comics.
It's got me back in the groove, man. I think I was always always lacking the technical ability and the artists who I thought were good enough to carry it off, and all these people, you know, Rachel Ball, and you know, all these people have done marvelous things with my work. Yeah. I'm just Rick Jackson, yeah, it's just, I'm so pleased. It's and finding Cliff, we were chatting to Adam about it the other day, one of our board meetings, which involves me and him sitting there drinking and laughing, and we're saying we're actually really proud that we're going to be the first people to publish him in sequential art, because I think he's really going to. I've already had a couple of phone calls from people saying, "How much? What's his page rate?" You know, like that. So I think people are going to be really impressed. And then, of course, the next thing is in his Spacewalk, which again is going to be amazing.
Right. Obviously, can't wait for that.
Yeah, it looks amazing, man. Amazing. So I'm well pleased. So Wednesday or Thursday you'll be able to buy it. I'll put it online as soon as it arrives.
And it's going to be, what's the store again?
It's neverunending.bigcartel.com.
Nice.
Thank you, mate.
Butcher, have you got any shouts?
I've got two shout outs, both Kickstarter comics. The first being Access Denied by Samuel George London. In the near future, an artificial intelligence named Zeus leaves Earth to build an android city on Mars called Neo Olympus. 20 years on, and though human-android relations are tense, humans are invited to build an embassy in the new city. So that is running for going about 8 days, so 7 days when you listen to this. It's very much nearing its goal, and check Sam's Kickstarter out. And also we've got a Galaxy Grappling Alliance.
Yes.
Solar Slam, issue 2. The greatest sci-fi wrestling comic in the galaxy is back. And better than ever. If you grew up a fan of WWF, NWA, WCW, and the golden years of the 80s and 90s, or follow the latest AEW grapple action, then this is a comic for you. I don't know all those abbreviations, so.
But I do.
I still backed it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, I backed it, yeah.
Yeah.
So give that a go.
it's going to be seen as the golden age of Kickstarter, this, during the lockdown, I've got to tell you.
Yeah.
There's so much good stuff on there.
I've got one on there. It's absolutely smashed its goal. And speaking of Rob Jones, Helen Stalingrad.
This is amazing. Yeah.
A wartime atrocity, a powerful ancient evil, war is hell. One of the bloodiest battles in the history of warfare collides with an ancient and hungry evil. You know, World War Two. Is it World War? Yeah, World War Two and horror. I mean, those two go together like chocolate and peanut butter, don't they? Really. It is an 80-page graphic novel in the vein of classic war story comics such as DC Thompson's Commando. I never saw anything like this in Commando, though. Jesus. But definitely check it out. I haven't got the list of the other creators. Ah, here it is. Here we go. We've got Rob Jones. We've got Matthew Hardy, Russell McEwen, William McLaughlin, and PJ Holden is also doing a variant cover as well. So, yeah, go on to Kickstarter and find that one. It's, like I say, it's absolutely smashed it. They know how to fucking promote Kickstarters. So, you know, this advert's meaningless because they've already made it. But
I
saw the artwork for that and I was like, fucking sign me up for that. And
it does look incredible. It really does. Yeah, that's a really lovely bit of teaser artwork they put out. Incredible stuff in it here. Yeah. Also, don't forget the Spark 3 is currently at the printers.
Which
all three of us are in, and it's currently also on Kickstarter. So it's made its amount. It's got just under 2 weeks to go, but we can really do with some other people signing up. It's part of it. You sign up as a subscription service to get all the issues coming. I've seen a lot of the work that's coming in it. It looks amazing. So I'm really pleased with our work in that as well. Dan's gone off on his own and done a really cool story. The kids are going to fucking freak over it. Top Gun in space, we're calling it. And me and Vince have done Monster Sports Club. So, yeah, brilliant. I've done some editing on it. So, yeah, it's really looking good. Yeah.
Yes.
I've not seen any of the other stuff going in, so I can't wait for it to turn up.
Yeah. Good stuff, man.
It's top stuff, man. And, a big, big shout-out to anyone that joined us for... we've essentially just stamped our name onto this.
So
first out, we're going to put a shout out to Tom Curry for sorting out and organising this, which turned out to be the Drink and Draw, which happened this Friday online. First one of its kind. We, of course, then stuck our names on it and shamelessly said, it's the first ever awesome comic Drink and Draw, because we're shameless whores. But in all seriousness, anyone who turned up for that night, it was such a great laugh.
Fucking great, wasn't it? Yeah. I'm sorry we didn't get to chat to everyone because we had some people come in for an hour and then disappear off. And I didn't get everyone's names, man.
Yeah.
I wish I had done. But there was I think we probably had 25 people in and out of it. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, folks. I mean, if you're wondering, it's nothing like this show. It was literally just everyone just turning up. It was just a real good atmosphere. And people were just drawing. There was no themes for this one. I'm not going to take a theme at any point anyway for any future ones because I'm just going to do Kurt Russell films. But that's...
It was like sitting around a big table in a pub with everyone taking a piss out of each other for about 3 hours. It was really good, man. I really enjoyed it.
It was a great it was my first sort of proper drink and draw, and the thing is there was no pressure. You could just you could turn up for 15 minutes if you want and
you don't even have to have your camera on. A couple of people didn't have their cameras on. It's fine.
So thank you to everyone that joined us for that. Thank you to Tom for setting it all up. Went so well that we might make it a semi-regular kind of thing. But we're talking about that and seeing how it's going to go. So I think in this time where everyone wants a bit of social contact, we know how important the online stuff is, whether you're Zooming with it or Skyping with your family or whatever. This is just another extension of that. If you're missing all those folk, and you don't even have to join our one, by the way, if we organise another one, set up your own one, do some drinking and drawing, and just chilling out, and then just post the results up online. That's what it's all about. It's just keeping the good vibes going. I know I sound like a hippie, but it was like that. It was just really good. Good laugh.
It was a chuckle, yeah. And I drank quite heavily on it. I was quite proud of myself.
Brilliant.
Did you really?
I'd love to be in the next one.
I'd fall off.
Can't believe I missed that.
Well, you're more than welcome to join the next one, sir.
Yeah, where were you? Yeah.
I was drawing. I've got to be honest. I was drawing and there was no drinking involved.
Well, that's actually, you don't have to drink, to be honest.
No, but I bloody like to.
fair enough. Maybe we need to talk to him off air. So stay tuned to the awesome pod page and everything for more news on that going forward. So without further ado, We're at that stage of the show where we've talked enough about comics. We're going to talk some more about comics, and we're going to recommend some fantastic comics for you to check out. Rory.
Could I just jump in with a quick shout-out, though?
Of course you can, babe.
Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to jump in for Luke Condor, who I'm doing In the Key of Fingers with. I think Rob Jones is lettering that as well.
Oh, nice.
And that's, I can't say much about it, but it's been going in some interesting directions, and there may be some news on that in the not too distant future. But I just wanted to thank him for that, because it's a great little story, and I really enjoyed drawing that one so far.
Awesome.
Sneaky Hawk and Cleaver boys.
Yeah. Very incredible. Sneaky indeed. Right then, Rory, as is tradition with this show, it's become a tradition now, isn't it, to let the guests go first. It's our time to recommend some comic books. So what would you like to recommend to our lovely listeners?
Okay, well, as ever, at this time when I hear the guests as well, everyone struggles to pick something, you know, there's so many. A couple of honourable mentions. There was one I wanted to mention called Hostage by a guy, Delisle, I think he's called. He did all the books like Jerusalem and Pyongyang, Burma Chronicles. But anyway, the Hostage one. Is basically a 430-odd page book where about 400 pages of it, the bloke's chained to a radiator in a room with a one window.
I've seen the cover of this.
I have too. Yeah.
So I only wanted to mention it because I couldn't believe a book that long could be that gripping when the bloke doesn't move out of the room for about 90% of the book. It's amazing. So
yeah, I need to get this. I've seen this about as well. Yeah, it looks good.
It was a good little read. But the book I have picked is, funnily enough, talking about him earlier, was Casanova.
Nice.
Hey.
Good shout, man.
I was just going to give a little read off the back because they say it better than I could. Kidnapped through space and time by a madman, Casanova Quinn finds himself in a parallel universe to his own. There he was, a hedonistic playboy and thief, jet-setting around the world in search of his next thrill. But here, Casanova Quinn is synonymous with law and order. And now he'll bring down the good guys from the inside, or the bad guys will never let him go home. And I just find it amazing. It's a roller coaster of a book. I have no idea where it's going, what it's doing half the time. I find myself scratching my head at the end of it, knowing I've enjoyed the journey, but I have no idea what they're up to. And that's what I like about it. I have to keep looking back into it to go, hold on, did I get that right? Did I understand that? But it's obviously drawn by the boys again, Gabriel Bay and Fabio Moon. And written by Matt Fraction. It's an Image book, I believe. I can't wait for the final hardback volume to potentially finish the story. I don't know if that's where it's going.
I like the way they do those.
Has it always been Image?
Oh, I don't know, actually.
Well, I know these hardback collections are. But yeah, I don't know if the initial...
I can't remember where it started. Might be.
Yeah.
I like the way they do those hardbacks, Image. They did Airboy in the same way. It's sort of printed onto the hardback, which I really like.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice. Stuff.
So
no, dust jacket crap.
No. Yeah.
And you have a quick mention I was going to give was going to be Dragman, Stephen Appleby, but you guys did such a good job talking about that prior to its release.
Oh, mate, love that book.
Any excuse to put that in the show notes, we will.
Yeah, I've been chatting to Stephen today, actually.
Right.
Yeah, really. What a great creator, man. Like, such constantly over decades putting out really good stuff. That, again, we're talking about getting outside that bubble, appeals to all different people. It's not just the comic shop crowd. It's not just the graphic novel crowd. Not just the Guardian crowd. It's all different people. And it's so well done like that, yeah. And it's a really meaningful comic on a number of levels.
I thought it was touching and funny and just everything about it was great. That was my little recommendation.
Nice
one, man.
Very good way to start. Tony, do you want to go next?
Just a quick one from me. Avengers Empire, spell it with a Y, issue 0 came out this week. Did anyone read it?
No.
Written by Al Ewing, artist Pepe Larraz. I love Pepe's work. Great. He did the X stuff, the Jonathan Hickman stuff, which blew me away. Colours, Marta Grazia. Letters by Joe Caramagna. Editor, Tom Brevoort. Editor-in-chief, C.B. Sabowski. 30 pages, full colour. Swordsman comes back.
Is that literally all you're saying about it? It's just...
Swordsman comes back.
Yeah.
That's... Okay. not really
the
A-list villain, is he?
No. That's
There's Marvel.
That's
for
it,
you.
Really. There you go. That's my review. I would suggest you probably wait for the collection.
Yeah.
Spend your money on this nonsense. Yeah. It's like suddenly it's gone, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy and Endgame were popular. What can we do in Cosmic?
And that will be the pull quote used on the book.
That's frustrating because, like, they took inspiration from the comics, and what? Now you're going to go to the films to get it. Yeah, no, don't do that.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Like, can someone just come up? I don't know what about you, but there's not been that many good events ever. There's a few that you can count on one hand. Civil War was a great idea and carried it out pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, Secret Wars, no matter what you say about it, is the first event, was quite good. Blackest Night was pretty good. Yeah. But now they're just like, oh, we need an event. Who should we give it to? Let's give it to that person. Come up with something fucking original, for Christ's sake.
The idea of, like, writing a story to incorporate all the characters fucking is such amazing. I would love to come up with a concept for that. I'm sure most writers would. But then they'd always come up with something a bit kind of, okay.
Yeah, like it's like they have to have one. It's been delayed and delayed. And
I can imagine sometimes it suffers from, like you say, you got a brilliant idea. You go, oh, what if it did this? Yes, that's wonderful. Let's do that. Right, now, how can we factor it through to all of the 50 books?
Yeah, it's got to be in Captain Marvel, and She-Hulk's got to be in it. And I don't know if you know this, but we're trying to get the Fantastic Four back on top. So can they be in it again? You're like, well, that's just gone to wank, isn't it?
Yeah, so fuck that up. Another thing as well, say if he's working on a title and you're building in all these plot lines and how this is working out, and they say, oh, by the way, like in 2 issues' time, there's going to be like a mega event where all these fucking aliens come down and piss all over the cities. Oh, fuck's sake.
Yeah, if you're writing Punisher and you go, oh, really?
Yeah.
I just want to fight the Kingpin.
Yeah, it really doesn't. Yeah. It kind of breaks, especially with stuff like Punisher, all the street level stuff, doesn't it?
And you can tell when the writers don't give a fuck and take two issues out to let someone else write the book and then come back and just act like it never happened.
And you can tell the writers who are saving their best ideas for their Image book as well.
I would have my character waking up in bed from after those crossover issues. Waking up like they'd come out, or getting out of the shower like Dallas. Completely saying two fingers up to that.
So once a year, everyone will look forward to the Dan Butcher wake up issue. Like, yes.
A little shout out to Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, which I think I said to you earlier, I enjoyed more than I expected. And there's a bit where Affleck's in it, and they say, I really liked you as Batman. And he says, yeah, Batman's great, his dad, you know, and his mum. What's his mum's name again? And he just winks at the camera. Sorry, okay, on to you. Who's next?
They're all going to make a fucking TV series out of that fucking film. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Oh, well, let's...
God bless them.
Too many people have talked about that. Butcher, what have you got?
Scalped.
Yes.
Jason Aaron, R.M. Guerrero.
It's the next leg of the Dan Butcher Falls in Love with Jason Aaron tour.
Yeah, it's fucking amazing. Hard to describe both this and the other one, like how much you're interacting with real people on the page. Hmm. Everything just feels real, and the character's so rounded and fleshed out. It's amazing. It's just, I'd love to make the comparison, but it feels like it's kind of almost stills from a TV show or something. It's just so well rounded and fleshed out, and the writer and artist is working together in like unison to create this kind of world. I was recommended it by one of our patrons, and then after reading Southern Bastards, going on to this, you guys had sort of said how great this was, and I picked up the first trade, and it's fucking great.
I've never properly read it. I've only got the first trade, and it's one of those ones where I've wanted to buy all of the trades, even though I haven't read it, but I've held off thinking, don't be silly, Vince. Just read the first trade first.
It's one of my favourite ever books ever. Yeah, I think it goes to places you're completely and utterly caught up in it. Yeah, I just
there's
love it.
Similar themes to Southern Bastards. Obviously, I think that's the writer's angle. But it's just great. And even the cover, like upon reflection, like it's got the main character with the sort of Indian headdress on, and he's got the pair of nunchuckers around his neck, and it's just lovely book.
It all happens on an Indian reservation, indigenous person's reservation, and which notoriously, if anyone knows anything about it, they have to be policed by federal police because There's so much crime, and there's different laws in relation to the reservations, aren't there, about having casinos and this sort of thing, and the meth and the alcoholism and the addictions and all that sort of thing is just rampant in them. There's a real issue. And you drop this guy and you'll find out who he is into the middle of it to do something, and it's incredible. That's just day one.
It kind of comes in this like, it starts just absolutely like starts running straight away. It's just dude smashing stuff up, and then he gets kind of like forced into position. He goes, bloody hell, where did this go? And it's just a roller coaster ride. It really is.
Yeah. Not for the faint of heart either. They kill people off and things happen to people and
sexual content, violent adult themes,
drugs.
Tricky subject, but handled masterfully. Brilliant.
Yes.
Yeah. I reckon it's one of those ones you need to grab, Vince, because I don't think trades are always available. Look at something like Lucifer.
I've only got the first trade and I haven't read it yet. So
I think they brought some hardbacks out, didn't they? I think at one point.
Yeah.
I've got a complaint to make about it, I seem to be complaining about everything fucking now. the paper quality, I've got like the Vertigo, and it's on the paper version, that kind of that rough paper that they do it on.
Yeah.
And it really feels like. I'm not always going in for the kind of glossy paper, but I'd like a kind of a better quality paper for this one.
Yeah, they could do so much more. I think it was very much that cheaper print stock, because obviously they're printing mass, and I know it's a Vertigo thing.
Yeah.
But I really I understand.
Works for some of their titles. Works for some
of the titles, but some not so much. Do you know what I mean? And it would really benefit. And there is a difference between the individual issue and the trade, isn't there? Really, you know, there is a chance to upgrade it a little bit, but
I think for something like Preacher or Hellblazer, it's got that pulpy feel to it. I think it's fine for me, but something maybe for this, or I always thought Fables suffered a little bit from it being like that as well.
Fables
could have done with something.
It's just they're like the blacks are kind of like they're a gray and not like a rich black and heavy, and it feels like it lacks the weight that it deserves, but it's not a deal breaker by any means.
Cool.
I'm
glad you're enjoying that, man. It's one of my favorites.
I've been working my way through the various. Did you say there's how many volumes?
I think there's 60 issues of that one. I think
so. Ten volumes.
Maybe if there's like a kind of a bigger collection of them.
Wasn't there a double collection, so each trade, two trades in one, which with a hardback, was it that? I think
Vertigo normally do that though? I know Preacher has had some bigger collections, hasn't it? But
yeah, I'm just trying to think if anything else. Oh, I see Sandman has.
Where do you get like a lot of Image books or Dark Horse books that they'll really turn into these big sort of legacy omnibuses that I seemingly have a thing for these days? But but with the DC and Vertigo stuff, not so much really, is it?
Yeah, I'm just looking up on my Vertigo shelf, and I'm thinking 100 Bullets, has that had that? I don't know.
Yeah.
Northlanders, has that? Some of the bigger titles.
There's one on here is Scout Trade Paperback Book 1, and it's got Scout 1 to 11.
Oh, it is. Then it's a bigger one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did that with Lucifer, didn't they? Where they released trades that were essentially double the original trade. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Okay. How can I find about the paper stock?
But no.
On Amazon. Excuse me, what's the paper stock? It's the GSM.
Oh, God, don't get me started on GSM.
I've been looking at that all week.
Anyway. Yeah, I know you have. Anyway, right, okay, my one next. Tony's got one more, but I'll jump in first. My one, I don't have to worry about paper stock because I read a PDF. Well, I read two PDFs, actually. This is a comic book I'll be looking forward to reading for quite some time. It is Grit. It's upcoming from Scout Comics, a name that I've mentioned a couple of times, and a publisher I'm getting hooked on. In fact, just today, I actually went onto their website, and because I can't buy the, you know, they're not really on Comixology. You know my normal go-to, find the digital issue.
Okay.
There's a couple of series of theirs on Comixology, but I would suggest if you do want to buy some PDFs, you can just buy them. It's simple to do on their website. It's literally you just buy them and then you get the PDF. So, so that's what I did with another series that I'll probably be talking about in the future. But, Grit, the synopsis is this. When an aging monster hunter comes up against a foe that can't be felled with the swing of his axe, he's forced to face the unintended consequences of his brutal style of problem-solving. Southern fried sword and sorcery. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't like southern fried stuff? Now, the team is from writer Brian Wickman. The artist is Kevin Castianero. Colorist is Simon Goff. Letterer is Misha Myers. Now, ever since I saw the first initial image of what the cover is for Grit, which shows a sort of a grizzled axe wielding badass sort of ready for a fight, which was kind of brought to mind like Southern Bastards, that kind of stuff, you know, that kind of vibe. But ever since I saw that cover, it's been on the top of I must read this as soon as I can. That kind of thing. I think it was a retweet or something similar, which is one of the rare positive things about social media. Hey, but it led me to the writer Brian Wickman's work. And if that name rings a bell with any of our regular listeners, it's because I recommended an earlier work of his. I think about 5 shows ago, Big White, on a recent show, which is a short book that's free to read. On his website, and you really need to check that out, because that was a cool little story as well. Anyway, I was lucky enough to get my hands on preview copies of issues 1 and 2 of Grit from Brian himself. Thank you very much, by the way, Brian, if you're listening. And I know the book is releasing this July, or if you listen to this in July, it's out now from Scout Comics. And despite initially, when I got the PDFs, we are always grateful to get any kind of previews of anything, which is
big time. Yeah.
Yeah. I was initially, and because I was looking forward to this, I thought I was initially planning to read them this weekend. But when I got them, I couldn't help myself and devoured them pretty much immediately after I downloaded them. And I can thankfully say that this comic is fucking awesome. I absolutely loved it. Anyone who's listened to any recent shows will know I've been mourning the premature ending of a personal favourite series of mine over the past couple of weeks, and it's almost like the comic gods heard my over the top first world problem sobbing and said, bless him, let's give him another series he's going to love, you know, just to shut him up. And Grit is that. It is so completely in my wheelhouse, it's unreal. There's fantasy elements. There's almost a Western flavoured sort of pacing and sort of main character. A little bit sort of, he almost reminds me of like Clint Eastwood from Unforgiven, that kind of vibe in some kind of ways. You know, and he's just about, it's a fantasy, but it's not like a Conan sort of thing. You look on the cover and he looks like, he's almost like sort of 1920s, you know, kind of the way he's decked out, you know, or something from the First World War or something. It's got that kind of, but it doesn't, there's no period setting or anything like that. It's just this world. You drop straight into it. There's mysteries yet to be revealed, which I always love. There's lots of humour, cursing, and so much action. The book is practically bleeding from it, and I mean that in every sense of the word. I will say that the creative team have come together as such a cohesive unit, I think, which, you know, I'm trying to make an effort, like whenever I do these little write-ups, to mention everyone involved, because it's a team effort, a comic book, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It is. And I know, like, Wickman's script just absolutely, just there's loads of wits. It's crackling with great characters, and it drops you straight in, but there is, you know, still sprinkling mysteries yet to be revealed. But the script also lets the art of, like, Castellanero do the work. And my word, there's a lot of kinetic work on show here. I would say put that name on your list now, folks, because he's going to be huge if there's any justice in the world. Just like we spoke about Trakhanov in the past, I was looking at pages of this just thinking, there's a rocket. I don't know if anyone's lit the fuse on this rocket that's on this guy's back right now, but Jesus Christ. And the rest of the team, like Goff's, like the palette of colours are luscious in this. You know, it veers from like sepia and more sedate tones to sort of knightly blues. And there is a colour palette that I know, Dan, you'll be especially sort of familiar with. There's a wonderful glossy colouring of blood that reminds me of what you see in like books like Invincible. You know, that sort of that bright red. It's like sticky, shiny, and like you know, really gloopy, isn't it? I really like that effect. I think I'm going to try and steal that effect one
day. Same, yeah, like that.
Yeah. I mean, I use it as an influence. You know. And the lettering, Myers' lettering is absolutely spot on as well with the work. You know, it's perfect. There's a couple of different sort of speech balloons and things going on, using a lot of negative space around it, so you're really focusing on what everything is being said. It's not a book littered with flashy sound effects pages. There's action heavy pages that have no sound effects at all, which I think is quite interesting. You know, like just someone slicing and dicing, and there's just no there's no sound effects at all. It's just the artwork. There's no speech. There's no nothing. And I think that's really good. That makes what you do see. It's something I will think about in my own lettering, because sometimes I'll just letter everything. But the absence of lettering makes what you do see on the page even more important and more impactful. And I know sometimes that's in the script, and I know sometimes probably letterers might embellish, or you know, they might take some stuff out. It'd be interesting to see if letterers have ever done that, you know, just sort of said to a writer, I think this might be more better without the sound effects or something like that. But the sound effects look great as well. I say sound effects. Do you say sound effects when it comes to comic books? How do you? Is it just effects?
I always say sound effects. If it's in the script, I write SFX. Yeah, in the script. Yeah.
Because I think when you're reading it, or when you're writing it, or when you're drawing it, you hear it, don't you? You do hear the action.
Oh, mate, I hear accents. Mm. Yeah. I hear all sorts of things.
Yeah. So the lettering's spot on. I absolutely adore this book. It's blood-filled. Very blood-filled and violent, but there's a great sense of humour. It looks glorious. I can't wait to see how the story develops. Issue 2 introduces another main character, and already I can see there's another classic buddy comedy style sort of action. Maybe not buddy comedy, but you know, it's that sort of duo in the making of two sort of opposite kind of characters. And I haven't given it. I hope I haven't given anything away. And I think that's for good reason. As always, with a lot of comics, certainly a lot of comics that I try to recommend, I suggest you go in blind. Not, obviously, not literally. But, you know, if you get a copy and read it from page one, you know, skipping through a PDF, flicking through a print copy. You know, some of the best experiences I've had with comics, usually digital, because I try not to flick through them. It's easy to flick through a printed copy of a book, isn't it? But it's when the story surprises you, it's so much more impactful.
And preconceptions are something. Yeah. Preconceptions will ruin your experience a lot of the time. Sometimes it's nice just to find something. I'm about to talk about one now, and I had no idea what it was like, and I enjoyed it. And you don't go in with any sort of second guessing, you know?
And a splash page or a moment is meant to hit you. It's meant to really affect you.
Yeah.
And if you've looked through a book and you've all of a sudden you've seen, oh, I know that character dies, like 100 pages in, it's going to kind of ruin in some ways what leads up to it. Get hold of this one. This book certainly surprised me. Around the halfway mark of issue one, they had a reveal that you've got a witness, without any spoilers. But there's so much blood. I had fun with this book. You know, it's doing a lot of things that are totally in my wheelhouse, and I'm on board for this series. Hopefully, I don't know whether it's going to, it's limited issue. I know they've got like 3 or 4 set up, I think. I know I've seen covers for like issue 3 stuff. I hope that there's a good, decent arc out of it. Even if it's just a 6-issue series, I can already see that this is going to deliver. Go to scoutcomics.com to find out more. You can, if you want to see more of Brian's work, brianwickman.com. That's where you can find out more about this and download. He's literally totally appeared on my radar. He's got some information about this and Big White, which you can download for free on brianwickman.com. Follow them on Twitter at scoutcomics, at Brian Wickman. I will put the other creators in the show notes if I can find their Twitter as well. But this, I just love it when you look forward to a book and it absolutely smashes it. Isn't that great?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Always, man. That's why we're here. Yeah.
I've already been a dealer and fed it to the other two to see what they think of it. So
yeah, good. I'm going to read that tomorrow. I think my lunch break. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's mine. Grit. Tony.
Hey, kiss my grit. What was that from? Hey. So I'm a bit like you, man. I'm missing comics a little bit. The people I subscribe to send me comics aren't often sending me any. Mm. So I'm looking for a new series to read, and the only way to do that these days is digitally, isn't it, almost?
Yeah.
Mm. Apart from Strange Apparitions, another shout for you there, Alex. Hey. So I went in and blind bought, I saw it was out this week, and Let's All Die 2 came out this week. So I thought, right, I'm going to go in and read 1 and move on to 2. So I went straight in and bought them both by Handwritten Entertainment. Now, Handwritten Entertainment is something probably we haven't heard of yet. They've got 2 series out. It's Sean Gabarin, who we have spoken about from Action Lab previously for the Puppet Master stuff. Possible future guest. I've been chatting to him this week. He's written it. Art by Michaela DeSacco, colour by Jan Perelet. As I say, issue 2's come out, and it's a horror book, Let's All Die, as you would presume, but it's a horror book with an interesting twist. So it starts off with a girl who's sitting on a balcony, and there's a narration to it, and she's saying, you know, I sit on this balcony every day, and she's testing herself to see whether she's going to kill herself and throw herself off the balcony. And every day she gets a little bit, leans a little bit further out, and her grip becomes a little bit looser. And then you flash to a suicide help group, and she is there, and you realize what you've just experienced with her sitting on the balcony is something she shared with the group. This woman, who's called Zoe, and two other members of the group have been asked after the meeting to stay behind by the bloke who runs the group. And a bloke turns up, a Dr. Thompson, and he owns a holiday camp, as you do, in the sort of Friday the 13th kind of, you know, classic American slasher movie holiday camp.
Yeah.
And his brother is a guy called Adam, who is a beast in the same form as Jason, you know, Voorhees or someone like that, who's stalking the woods, slasher movie style, around this camp. And he's been quiet for a while, but people have started disappearing. And the twist in it is that he gets, this is where it gets slightly dark. He says, why don't you go to the holiday camp and he'll kill you? You want to die? Why don't you go and die there?
Hmm.
And it's a really interesting twist on idea.
That's interesting. Yeah.
It's like a slasher movie euthanasia kind of fucked up kind of.
But he incorporates cleverly into it the tricks that Scream incorporated so cleverly, but with an extra twist, where Scream said, if you have sex, you're going to get killed by the slasher, aren't you?
Yeah.
So a couple are there, and they say, well, let's have sex, because we'll get killed. And they describe it, this is our exit strategy. No more suffering or failed attempts. This is how we die. So they split up between
that's so fucked up, but
isn't it?
I will also say, that is genius.
Brilliant, isn't it? Yeah. But you also, what also plays in is how much of there is there that voice in our heads where we might want to kill ourselves, but there's a survival instinct, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, and on spoiling thing, not everyone is what they seem. A girl appears in the group. It's complicated, but a girl turns up. They're all around the fire one night time, and a girl turns up and said, and sort of surprises them because they think it's the killer, you know, the hammer killer, because he kills people by bashing their heads in with a hammer. And she appears and she says, look, I'm sorry to bother you, but my car's broken down the road. The old classic story. I'm just looking for somewhere where I can, you know, make a call or try and get a lift somewhere. And they've turned up in a minivan and thrown the keys into the water, into the lake, because they know they're going to die. There's no point in having the keys. Mm-hmm. And they don't want, they in their heads, they don't want to escape. But they also don't want the keys in case they kind of survival instinct, fight or flight, makes them escape.
Gotcha.
And she's there. She... has a moment with one of the other campers, a sort of, there's a romantic moment to it, which gets you thinking, well, are they going to survive, or who is she really, or well, why has he chosen the tree house to live in? Surely that it must be more difficult for the killer to get up into the tree house, and you begin to suspect everyone. Really clever, really fresh, actually. I found it a really fresh thing. And while they're there, they share their need to die, they want to die in different ways. So there's a woman who's self-harming, and she begins to, her wrists begin to bleed over breakfast, and there's a guy who sort of jokes about it. He just jokes all the time about it. Really good. There's a bit of a spelling mistake, put me off slightly, but I'm sure that's forgiven. You feel that there's the secrets, I've read the first two issues, but you feel that it's clever like that, because how many comics do you read where all the secrets are revealed at the end of the first issue and the rest of the four issues are just trying to get to the end? But this one, it's leaking them out, little bits are coming out, and you're beginning to suspect more things as you go along. The art's great. It's on that side of caricature, but realistic, so everyone's immediately recognizable. You're stuck with quite a small little cast of people, so you're not ever second guessing who anyone is. The killer is that cliche of the Jason Voorhees kind of character, but it's done. That's the why. It's done with that point. You know, it does get very gory. It gets quite sexual at moments. I'd just love to see if Sean got on a big two book, how he'd do it. If you've got this guy doing these small publishing venture books, you know, with such great ideas. I mean, remember they had talked about how when he did Puppet Master, how the puppet with the hook swung on someone's eyelid to stab them. And you know, this is really, really genius little moments. And yeah, so Handwritten Entertainment. Go and find their stuff on Comixology. Their other book, which I've downloaded and haven't read yet, is called Shark Squatch. So that's
yes,
that's right up my street. Yeah. So that is called Let's All Die, 1 and 2 out at the moment. I don't actually know if there's a physical copy because sometimes you don't see them, do you? I like to think there is. There's a handwritten website. If you go to Sean Gabarin on Twitter, just look him up. I've got it in front of me. And you can link to a shop for all this stuff. But yes, it looks like a really interesting little line that sort of started. And I'm going to follow. There you go. That's my one.
I need to get hold of this. This sounds
great.
And I think all of the books that we've talked about this week sound great because they are great. So thank you for listening, everyone. We hope you had a fun old time listening to us waffle on. And our lovely guest, Rory, thank you again for joining us this week.
Thank you, guys.
That's good stuff, dude.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now you can follow him online, etc. And we're not going to forget to put his links in, unlike we've done in the past with some of our guests.
We get too excited.
Yeah.
A couple of times we haven't put our links in because we're just too excited.
Oh, yeah, well, I know. Probably because it just becomes carnage from this moment on. But if you enjoyed this episode so far, ignore the next 10 minutes. And if you want to let us know about any sort of publishing ventures or any comic book stores, if there's anything you want us to shout out about, whether it be workshops, online things you're doing that are just going to help people out in these times where, you know, everyone just, we need more comics and we need more good times right now because the world's a crazy place. So it's awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. email us, let us know, and we'll put a shout out in the show notes, of course. Follow us on Twitter at the awesome pod, where we'll be sort of retweeting. I think we'll probably post some of the drink and draw artwork over on the next week.
That's a good idea. Don't post mine. Mine was rubbish.
We're post all of it, Tony. Yours wasn't rubbish. In fact, you had a chorus of people telling you to shut up, which is quite nice. In a nice way. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you don't like Facebook, sign up just to join the group Awesome Comics Talk. It's really the only thing you need to check out on Facebook, because there is a fantastic community of people on there who just want to talk about creating comics, reading comics, comics subjects. No hard selling, no shameless plugs for anything, I mean, apart from this show, but it's because we're monsters and we'll do whatever we want.
We had a guy last week just sort of appeared, posted his Kickstarter, had a sensible chat with him, and now he's a listener and he's enjoying it. So get on it. You will get a benefit out of it.
So, and if you join up and you listen to the show, just say you listen to the show and you'll immediately get in, because we're shameless and we need friends.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to the show, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe, leave a review, and just shout about the show, because it just helps get the word out about comics, all of these fantastic books that my wish list is just getting bigger all the time. I think I'm actually going to buy some more as soon as we finish recording. I should never record a show around payday. It's a nightmare.
I said that to Al Henderson this week. I said, man, you're costing me more money.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah. And if you listen to this show on other networks like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Play Ya Ya Ding Dong. Have you seen the Eurovision movie that's on Netflix?
No. We watched that last night.
Oh my God, it's fucking hilarious.
I thought it was good.
It's a bit shit to start with, and it gets going.
Yeah, it takes a while to find his feet.
Yeah, it does. And how much money they spent on that, I don't know. But there's it's Play Ya Ya Ding Dong. Yeah, you'll get it. Watch it.
I see that fucking Dan Stevens, and I was like, how can he do The Guest, which is one of the coolest films ever?
Yes.
And then this.
Yeah. He's awesome. I really like him as an actor.
He's great in that, man. Wait till you see it. There are no gay people in Russia.
Yeah. I suppose there was no look at the camera. It's just great.
Oh, God. Anyway, from that, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
S-A-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z or neveronanything.bigcartel.com for the upcoming Tony Osmond.
Yes. Daniel?
You can find me on Parler at Vanguard Comic. And you can be Vanguard at VanguardComic.com.
We're already friends on Parler during the show.
Fucking hell. Have I been trying to do a show and you've been bogging off to do all this other stuff?
Parlaying.
Oh God. Oh God. You can find me on social media at Jester Diablo, and you can read my daily comic Black on Instagram at Black the Comic. That's BLAK the Comic. And Rory, you are a legend. Thank you for joining us. Next time people hear you will probably be from a convention floor when we will be embracing, I'm sure. But until that time, once again, where can people? Well, you say that now. Where can people find you online, etc.?
You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, and Instagram under Rory Draws 4. That's number 4. And my website is rorydraws.com.
Nice. There you go. Go forth. Check out the Kickstarter for Horusari.
Check out the Rory's comics on Comic House.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, there's a few on there.
Yep. And thank you for listening. Have a brilliant week. We hope you're all safe, healthy, and the brilliant people that you are, because you listened to this show. You got to this point in the show, so you made it. Be proud of yourself. Slap yourself on the back. Because your weeks, it can only get better from here.
Yep.
So, from Dan, Tony, Rory and myself, have a great week. Read loads of comics. And what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome!
Rory saved it.
Fucking nailed it.
I just wanted to wake the wife up.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. 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 See you later.